welcome to another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's see. Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Danny Bonaducci.
Good morning, Adam Carolla. Teresa Strasser, Big O'Brien.
This is 866-901-AM. Donnie Wahlberg is supposed to be on the phone in a second. Danny, is this cake from you?
Yes, it is. And I made the whole thing. I didn't make the cake, but that's my writing.
It says, sorry I was... sorry I was...
65 million?
Years late. The dinosaur.
Yeah. I wasn't going to write that. I was just getting a cake and was going to write sorry I was late, but I ran into Ralph's this morning, and there was a cake with a dinosaur on it, but I still didn't think of it. I just grabbed it and said, "Here's the stuff where you write on a cake." And they said, "We can write on that cake for you." And I said, "Great." And then they ran around looking for somebody who knows how to write on a cake, and I thought, "I'm going to be late."
Yeah.
Looking for somebody to write on the cake. This is, I'm sorry, I'm late.
Sweet irony.
The guy who writes on a cake cuts out about 4:15 a.m. and then his replacement shows up at 6.
Apparently.
So that golden hour, about 5:15, 5:30 in the morning, it's hard to find guys who write on cakes.
I feel like somebody at the grocery store this morning had a very surreal morning. When Bonaducci came running in.
Yeah.
Hey, for frosting.
Hey, how about Bonaducci having a surreal morning being at Ralph's buying cake with Gouda right on it to say sorry?
Is the markets open 24 hours a day?
You know what? I realized that the other night. Amy came back from the airport and was staying in her apartment. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I'm going to work. I was up early. One of the reasons I've been having problems is for some reason I'm waking up before the alarms go off. I'm waking up at like 3:30 and then turning them all off because I'm obviously not going to bed. Mm-hmm. And then kind of falling back asleep. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't sleep, and I thought, rather than take this chance, I'll go buy her some flowers. And when she opens her door, she'll be surprised. And I went to the Ralph's by her house, and it was open 24 hours. So I just took a shot, and the Ralph's right here at the corner, 24 hours.
I just handed it.
That was only to impress you. You weren't supposed to have it and keep it in front of you all day.
Thank you.
That was very sweet. And you know what?
Well, I really don't like being late. And when I came in and I pitched that I'm not late for work, I meant that sincerely. And I don't know what the difference is, but if it's all the hecticness of divorces and all that wild stuff going on in my life. But whatever it is, late twice. I overslept once and was 25 minutes late, and then I don't know what happened the other time. It was a full-blown hour. Angie called me home and goes, "What the hell are you doing?" I don't know. What are you doing?
You know who's on time?
Who?
Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh.
He's calling in.
Yeah.
Looks as though he's on the line.
He's here.
Donnie?
He's here.
Donnie Wahlberg.
Hey.
Hey, what's happening? This is Adam. It's Danny.
What's up?
Teresa over there. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually in Connecticut right now.
Good time.
Can I give you a huge compliment to begin with? I've heard nothing but amazing things about your new show, The Kill Point.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's on Spike TV Sunday nights at 9 o'clock. I think we had John Leguizamo, who's on the show as well, and we spoke to him a week or so ago. So, Donnie.
Yes.
I saw the entire New Kids on the Block Behind the Music the other day. I can't. If you made a Behind the Music on that bird that just dips its beak and then dips back and then goes forward again with the red liquid in it, I would watch it.
Yeah,
I'm that into it. But the New Kids, I forgot about that.
Oh, not me. That's the year I got into radio. That's who was hot when I got into radio. Played them every 5 minutes.
I forgot about the phenomenon known as New Kids. And then you were able to reinvent, well, I shouldn't say reinvent, but if someone would have said a year after the New Kids broke up, hey, Donnie Wahlberg's going to have a legitimate, successful acting career where he'll be taken very seriously as an actor, everyone would have went, please. And they may have said the same about your brother at a certain point as well. That's kind of nice. Is that just a gene you guys have? Do you guys ever discuss it? Did he tell you his strategy from going from underpants guy to serious Hollywood actor?
No, I mean, honestly, the only strategy he ever mentioned to me was when he was first getting a movie offer for a real crap movie. I don't even remember what it was. We're at my house in Boston, and he said, "I'll tell you what, man, I'm going to make 40 mil, and then I'm going to an island, and you're never going to see me again." So I'm waiting for him to see when he's going to go to that island. I think he may stick to it. He may have made more than 40 million.
I was going
to
say.
But I think he's going to go.
Couldn't you just lend him the 40 million from your run?
No, I wasn't going to do that.
Now, Donnie, I don't know if you remember me. My name's Danny Bonaducci. Yeah, man. I thought I said something on the radio. You were having some trouble, and I was making fun of you being the kind of the spokesman for young celebrities who get in trouble. And I had said you had said, done something. It doesn't matter now because you're all grown up man. But I remember a news reporter said, and we just interviewed Donnie Wahlberg, and he said he liked this, and he really wants to punch Danny Bonaducci in the face. Did you say that about 25 years ago in Philadelphia?
Man, I really don't know.
Because I took it as a huge compliment that one of the new kids even knew I was alive well enough wanted to punch me in the face. Right. I took that as a big deal.
I think I saw you on some show giving us a hard time, but, you know, honestly, you know what, I haven't gone through all that stuff and sort of come through it, you know, okay. It's made me have nothing but respect for you, man.
You and me both, buddy. Good for you.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do, and, you know, no matter... I mean, for anyone, really. I mean, there's, you know, like I was talking to Michael Irvin, who used to play for the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
And he's gone on to be, you know, one of the biggest in-studio guys in the whole NFL, you know. And there was a time when he was out partying and going crazy. I mean, you would think he'd have no career after football. You know, he'd end up broke somewhere and have nothing. And you know, but he stuck to it and found a way. And, I mean, anybody who can have that level of success at an early age and sort of come through it, you know, I sort of have a real respect for that.
You hang around in a better crowd. I was hanging out with Mikey, the kid from the cereal commercials.
Yeah.
Hey, make Mikey eat it. He'll eat anything.
Yeah.
Dude, I think he's slamming H right now, I'm pretty sure.
Michael Irvin threatened to punch me in the face.
Why?
Actually.
It's tough, man.
It's a small world.
Yeah.
When you become famous at a young age, and you know, everybody's already written the book, you know.
Yeah, you're
it's
exactly right.
Written. And so for you to go write a different finish or a different chapter, you know, to the story, takes a lot of hard work. But
well, you know, I got it. We're speaking of Donnie Wahlberg, by the way, and we're talking about sort of resurrections and rebirths and things like that.
Because sometimes a rebirth can still have a defect.
It can be in a bad way or a good way.
I've seen the previews. Donnie looks great in this show.
People come to this country for sort of a new start, but you can have a new start even if you're born in this country.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why whenever anyone says, hey, man, I was in this sitcom and now I can't get work because they always look at me as little Johnny, the neighbor kid or whatever. I go, well, Johnny Depp used to be on a TV show and he was known as a character and he had a bunch of talent. He figured out a way around it. And no greater example of that than the Wahlberg brothers.
Yeah. They were
both known for something else.
And something gigantic. One of them being their wiener in that
underwear. Yes. They were both not taken seriously by anyone in the Hollywood community at some point, and they both were able to dispel or crush that myth.
Right.
Donnie, are you out in the Boston area full time, or do you go back and forth to Los Angeles?
I spend most time in L.A., but you know, if I had my way, I'd probably be in Boston full time. It's just kind of where I belong. But you know, I'm working that one out, so we'll see how that shakes out.
I have an acting question for you. I have an acting question for you. Because, you know, when I left the Partridge Family, it's because I was cute and I outgrew it and I was never really an actor and I didn't know it till later. When I watch you, you have grown into an actor. And what I'm wondering is, are you working on some kind of accent right now or to not have the Boston accent? Because the last time I spoke to you, you had a Southie accent like I couldn't believe. Right. And now you don't. Is it something you're working hard on right now for a picture or something?
You know what? I think the first time I really kind of noticed what a Boston accent sounded like, I was touring Europe with the group. And my older brother had just got out of prison after 8 years. And he had just... stopped using drugs and just stopped smoking cigarettes, and he was out on tour with us in Europe, and he was the angriest person I've ever seen in my life. And every time he opened his mouth, this horrific, aggressive, angry Boston accent would come out.
Can you do a little of it?
Oh, it just, well, well, let me finish the story first.
Okay.
Fair enough.
And it was at that moment that I realized that that's what I sounded like. You know, it was
right. Just
everything was abrasive and annoying. It wasn't so much the accent itself. It was just the anger and the aggressiveness. And I just said, you know what? I don't want to sound like that. I don't want to be I don't want to come off like that to people, because it was a bit tough to take. And you know, and then when you start acting, you know, you walk into an audition and you got a Boston accent, the first thing they say is, you know, can you do it without the Boston accent? You know, can you lose that? Can you lose that? You know, it's always something that they want you to, some hurdle they want you to jump over, you know. So it's just something I just had to do, I guess.
They've done well, man.
Boston has, I never met, I'm from North Hollywood. So I never met a human being from anywhere other than North Hollywood. And if I did, they were always from New York, mostly Mexico.
Right.
I never met anyone from Boston or that area until about 6-7 years ago when I started, a bunch of guys started showing up over at Kimmel's place. And then before I knew it, it seemed like every second guy I knew was from Boston.
Right.
Some of the angriest, smartest white people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
So coming from out here, I know a lot of angry, dumb dudes. And then I know a lot of angry dudes from all different nationalities, probably rightfully so. I never met so many smart, angry, scary Boston dudes in my life. It was the weirdest thing in the world. You know,
I like their accent.
I can explain it in one word.
What?
Parking.
Yeah.
There aren't many Boston guys that can't, you know, figure out how to do anything, you know. In other words, you were asking about me and Mark if we had a strategy or anything like that. It's like, you know, that's our strategy. It's survival, you know. And you grow up in the streets of Boston, you can literally go from, you know, turning in one alley and being faced with, you know, 20 guys who want to kill you and take your sneakers to, you know, turning around the next corner and you're dealing with some businessman, and you have to be able to sort of be a chameleon and be ready for anything. You know,
it's the cops grabby, they're crafty.
Yeah, you gotta be crafty.
It's Oliver Twist crap. Yeah. It's not street thug crap. So I learned all I needed to know about folks from your beloved Boston after the Patriots beat my beloved Rams in Super Bowl whatever about 5-6 years ago when we were in New Orleans, I believe.
Yep.
That was New Orleans, right?
Yep.
And I was with Jimmy Kimmel and the rest of the guys, Bill Simmons, another Boston guy from ESPN,
a buddy of mine.
Sports and all that stuff. We're hanging out. And I've been to other Super Bowls. When your team wins, you celebrate your team winning.
Not in Boston.
The folks from Boston were celebrating the other team losing. And there's a bunch of guys wearing Pats jerseys who were looking for Rams fans so they could make fun of them.
Right.
Most guys go, hey, buddy, tough loss. And then they go, yeah, Steelers. And then they start chugging some beer. They don't go start verbally abusing the people that lost.
No, we carry a big chip on our shoulder from Boston. It's
weird. It's weird that Boston is different than almost any other town that way.
Boston, we are more concerned with whether the Yankees lost than whether the Red Sox won.
That's like, well, I think that is about, that's the long and the short of it. Every other city cares. Did the Dodgers win? Did the Yankees win? Did the Orioles win? It's all about them. Boston wants to make sure the Yankees lost. And most Boston guys would rather see the Yankees lose, possibly, than their own beloved Sox win.
Yeah. We grow up learning to root against people in Boston.
It's not enough that I should succeed. Others must fail.
Oh, yeah, I grow up, it's like, and anyone who's like the Yankees, I can't root for them. You know, if it's like a dynasty, like Tiger Woods, it's like the greatest golfer of all time. I can't root for him.
So anyone who's even Yankee-like.
Yankees.
Well, maybe I found a kindred spirit here, Donnie, because I, believe it or not, as a Rams fan, even though the Pats beat the Rams had won the previous year. And the Pats had been to the show a few times and lost, and had been around for like 40 years and never won a Super Bowl.
Right.
So even as a Rams fan, I thought, you know what? I don't mind the Pats winning. Rams won last year, and the Pats haven't won in a while. And I'm the same way as you are, and maybe this is it. Maybe the Pats and Boston fans and people from that area aren't colossal a-holes. Maybe they're just huge fans of the underdog, and that's them.
Yeah, we tend to be underdogs, and we tend to root for the underdogs. But I think there is an element of a-hole in it, though.
All right.
To be honest with
well,
you.
Good one to go out on.
Yeah, we just want to see people. We want people to suffer with us. By
right.
growing up with teams that always lose, we want you to feel the loss. We want you to feel the pain. We don't even want to enjoy the win. We just want to watch you suffer the way we
I learned that firsthand at a New Orleans bar shortly after the Rams lost. The Kill Point is the name of the show. Spike TV, Sundays at 9 p.m. Donnie Wahlberg, great speaking to you.
You too, man.
A we'll, pleasure, man.
See you
all
in
right,
studio, I hope, soon. Yeah, Michael Irvin.
I said, you could barely understand that guy the first time I interviewed him with that accent.
Accent.
That's what I said. And I thought I heard obvious California tones. We just did a thing on my show yesterday where kids, it's funny that you mentioned Oliver Twist. The kids on my new the Next Child Star show mm-hmm. had to do Oliver Twist, and we sent them a dialect coach, and they had to do it in
like
a Cockney accent,
yeah.
right? And we heard these kids as a throng over the country.
Is it like a 10-year-old from Reseda going, more porridge, dude?
Worse, some of them from Cut. Boston, and they've got that whole Boston thing going
oh,
on,
really?
And every now and again they go, could I have some more? Right now! Oh, sorry.
right.
But the dialect thing, you could hear a couple of words that almost Eliza Doolittle. They sounded too good.
Right.
His words sound, his dialect sounded too, I'm not from Boston. That what? I knew he was doing something. I guess he's rehearsing for a part or something.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes, too, when the attitude starts going away.
Right. That's what he mentioned.
The when the attitude starts going away, the sound goes away a little. Like, let's just put it this way. There's Oprah,
yeah.
and then there's Oprah. There's
yeah.
Oprah,
yeah.
the black woman, and then there's Oprah, the black chick.
She has a couple tones.
Yeah, you take black folks, when they get riled up, they can go black on your ass, and when they're at a business
Coming
meeting...
Coming up, sex, sluts, and ecstasy.
Yeah, when Oprah sits well, down with Chris Rock, she turns black, and when she's sitting
Kiss
there...
my fat ass!
I think we all do that. I think when you're
sure.
any community you're sitting with, you try to fit in.
If you
no, I'm not saying it's about fitting in per se.
It just kind of
what
happens.
I'm saying is when you get your energy, like there are guys that are very like Donnie Wahlberg has lost his thing, but if you cut him off on the road and you both flew out of
yes.
your car, you would hear it again.
Yes.
Right? Oh,
if he gets
yeah,
in a
course,
fight
yeah.
or something,
it's
he probably
early
gets
in
it.
The morning, he's tired. He's subdued. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It goes away. He gets a few pops in him, and you guys get an argument out in the street, I'll guarantee you'll find that old guy from Boston.
Yeah.
All right. We need to take ourselves a break. I have a Michael Irvin story I want to tell since Donnie brought it up. It's kind of funny. He does want to punch me.
Awesome.
Also, I'd like to answer your questions at 866-901-ADAM. We do a lot of games and have a lot of fun around here. But this one, we're not going to give it a cute title. We're not going to put a twist on it. We're just going to dispense some advice. You have a problem. You have a situation. Okay. It doesn't have to be life or death. You just want some advice. I would say that in this room, not only do we have, 100-plus years experience, but we have quite a diversified portfolio of life
yeah.
here. Lots of formal education, a fair amount of street education, and just some good common sense and smarts.
So this isn't the Angel Adam Devil Day. Don't get confused where you have to call up with the world's most gnarly, should I have sex with my brother's wife? Yes. This is literally... anything from, I've always had a red car, but I think I'm getting more tickets. Should I get another? To the world's altering question, I think we collectively, as Adam said, can answer almost any question.
Yes.
In the sense of advice. If you need advice, it's 1-866-901-ADAM.
Thanks. I was taking a sip.
Oh, no problem. I didn't notice. I kind of strolled out Adam. 901-ADAM.
Thank you. I just swallowed. Good times. We'll take a quick break. Be back next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. The Ace Man feels like dispensing a little advice. So it's your chance to ask Adam anything. Call 866-901-ADAM. Here he is, Adam Carolla.
I got to write down my Michael Irving... wide out, threatening to punch me in the face story,
yeah.
and I'll tell it next break. Yes, advice. Okay. Well, people seem to think that's something I'm good at, and I know it's something Therese and Danny are good at, so why make a cutesy radio bit out of it? Why not just do the...
Yeah.
Why not just do it? And as a human being, you should never stop evolving. You should never stop talking to other human beings. You should never stop collecting data and then guiding your little GPS system accordingly. Everyone should have themselves a little GPS system in their head that never stops mapping the terrain, never stops analyzing data that's input from every different source, and then figuring out what's the best way to conduct myself. And it's not just about business. It's about relationships. It's about everything.
I'll give you a quick example. I was mortified about being a few seconds late yesterday.
Right.
I spent three times that amount of time getting a cake and writing, sorry I was 65 million years late on it because I had a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. And I would have to think that, and this is just me now blowing my own horn in a way, but my belief would be that people around here would say, he put in 10 times the effort of being late to apologize. Right. All is forgiven. That is what I chose to do. You know, that's the effort I put in to say, here's how responsible I am for my actions. Mm-hmm. I think that people have to do that too, investigate their situation around them and take the appropriate action to either rectify them, put a stop to them, or move on from them.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't interested in that, and they don't listen to people that are smarter than they are. And I'll give you an example. I do a lot of houses. I do a lot of rebuilding of houses. And when people, I always invite a group of people who I sort of trust and those who I don't sometimes do to walk through. And I tell them, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. And some of them stand there and say, that's a great idea. And some of them stand there and say, that's a horrible idea. And then some of them stand there and say, here's what I would do instead. And I say, that's a horrible idea. But if you march 10 guys through there and you keep saying what you're going to do in front of them over and over again, you start getting some pretty good ideas.
Yeah.
And 10 of them suck, but then one of them is, you need a French door here so you can get out to the patio instead of walking around to the front door. And you go, that's a good idea. Now, I always take their ideas. And people always say to me, wow, you're so open to taking other people's ideas. And I say to them, I have to live in the goddamn house.
Right.
I would love to take their great ideas, give them no money for their great idea,
right.
And then put said French door in, send them packing, and now I live in the house with the French door that goes out to the patio instead of the one where I have to walk around through the kitchen. I love people's good ideas.
Yes.
I don't want to be standoffish about other people's good ideas. Now, what other people do is they go, hey, I think you should put a French door here. I think you should shut the F up.
Yeah, you're pretty gay French door.
Who are you?
Well,
you think you're so smart? And then you start arguing. And then the person goes, well, I'm just going to put a bay window here. And you go, I just think a French door would be better. Next thing you know, you're arguing because it's their crappy idea versus your idea, which is better than their idea, except for it's not theirs.
Right.
So they're arguing. I don't want to argue. I don't want to cling on to my crappy idea because you're gone. People come through the house and I get all the credit.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the same with jokes. It's the same with anything. In this business, a lot of people go, that's my joke. I love that joke. Well, if you're the one who's going to tell the joke, tell the best joke. You'll get all the credit for it. Don't argue and cling to your crappy idea.
I'm taking one of Mike Lynch's jokes on the road with me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he wrote, I've never done a joke. I tell stories when I do my stand-up act. But when he had that picture of Nicole Richie looking ridiculously thin, and it says Nicole Richie pregnant, and he just casually said, careful, you're eating for one. And everybody cracked up, and I thought, hey, do you mind if I try that on the road? If it gets a laugh, I'll give you $50. He said, go. I'll give him his $50, but I'm going to stop the crowd and go, by the way, some really nice guy named Mike Lynch wrote that for me.
Right.
No credit. I'm taking it, getting a laugh, and if I don't get a laugh, then I'm beating Mike Lynch.
Yeah, or do it anyway. Aaron?
Yeah.
From
Santa Rosa.
What's up, baby girl?
I have a question in regard to figuring out if the guy I'm dating is into swinging. He swears he's not, yet we've gone to a clothing optional place, and he always wanted to go to the playroom, and then when we got back, he's like, oh, let's go to a party, and he always seems to know how much it costs to go, yet he's never been.
So you're dating a guy. How long have you been dating him?
About 3 weeks.
And you think he might be into swinging?
He likes to watch porn on the internet.
Okay. Now, porn on the internet has one thing. I was going to let Mr. Corolla start, but I got to jump in. Porn on the internet has nothing to do with swinging. As a matter of fact,
live porn. He likes to watch other couples, and you can join in if you want.
Okay, I mean, I understand. Granted, I've never seen that kind
live
of stuff.
Live porn?
I don't, yeah.
Adult friend finder. Check it out.
How do you jump in?
He tells me to watch while he gets ready to go.
And
then he says, hey, does that look interesting? Do you want to do that?
I'm like,
I don't know.
Okay. Let me...
Have you ruled it out?
I'm not sure. He freaks me out a little bit.
Okay.
Because I have real questions here.
Yeah. Freaks out. Freaks you out. That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to get their divining rod in tune.
Absolutely.
Or their pitchfork or their compass or whatever you use. You can't walk around, especially at your age. How old are you, Aaron?
32.
At 32 years of age, you shouldn't be trying to sniff people out and go, I can't tell. Is he a great guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he going to kill me in my sleep? He's creeping me out, but I'm attracted to him. You need to know. You need to know very intuitively if the hairs on the back of your neck are standing up or not. You know this guy is a weirdo. You know this is what you're getting 3 weeks in, God.
But see, I don't want an STD 3 weeks into it because of all this.
I'm saying, do you have kids?
No, and I don't want any.
And you don't want kids?
No.
And you'd like to know who the father was if, in fact, you had kids?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have no interest in swinging yourself?
No.
Mm-hmm.
See, I
have you ever checked out some of these people? It's like, oh, my God.
Yes. Well, look, but Aaron.
Okay.
Run,
let's not
walk.
Be naive. This is what you're signing up for.
STDs?
No, swinging.
No. Swinging and then STDs.
They often go together.
You understand?
Yes.
They're like Reese's that way.
Look, if 3 weeks into it, this guy's showing this many of his cards, God knows what's in the rest of the deck.
Right. There was an old joke. What's the difference between a fetish and a pervert?
Right.
A guy with a fetish uses a feather. A guy that's a pervert uses an entire chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know. If a guy comes into your room with a chicken and says, let's see what we can do with this, he's got some serious issues. On the other hand, and I think this guy 3 weeks in making that jump, because I've tried to get girls to do stuff over the span of a long time.
Right. Yeah.
A guy that's willing to jump in within 3 weeks, watch this, are you interested in that, has something up his sleeve that's probably motorized and has video equipment in it.
I think the bigger question, since all empirical evidence seems to point to this guy being a swinger and you aren't interested in swinging, why are you holding on to this guy? Are you afraid you can't find anybody else better?
Oh, he's on hold. I haven't really let go or held on or anything.
Why not let go?
But Aaron, most chicks with a shred of dignity would have moved on by now.
Okay. You've given me my answer. Thank you.
All right. That's enough. And look... No, there's not
bad.
Enough.
She sounded kind of shaky.
There's not enough Dr. Phils in the world to guide every human being on the planet. Right. You need to guide yourself. You can't stop and pull over and ask for directions. There's not going to be a gas station on every corner of life. You have to tune yourself in.
Yeah.
You have to understand when the guy walking down the street coming at you poses a threat or whether he's a nice guy. It's like we talk about all the time. You walk down, up and down your street, wherever you live, and you'll see dogs. You'll see the dogs that are wagging the tails, that are the friendly breeds that look like they're coming up and they want to sniff you out and want to play, and then they're the ones that look scary.
Right.
You need to be able to spot that, not when they're 3 feet away. You need to spot that from 75 to 80 feet away.
I'm great at that.
You need to see the dog way down the street and go, that's my buffer zone.
Yeah. Okay.
I got 100 feet between me and that dog right now. I'm going to either turn around and walk the other way, or I'm going to come up and give it a nice belly rub. You need to tell. Most people, or it seems like a lot of people, can't tell until the dog's on them, in which case... They're either getting licked or they're getting bitten. In this case, it's both.
Right. I have one quick question for you, though, Mr. Corolla. And that is, okay, so she is not into swinging, clearly. She made that clear. But there was some hesitation. I think if they're having, and three weeks in is just silly, but say you're 10 years in and you want to step stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go, the guy makes an offer that is beyond your limits.
Yeah.
But you're willing to raise the bar some. How does the girl... with confidence go, hey, well, I'm not willing to do that, but I'll do this with you. For example, I always wanted Gretchen to watch porn with me, and she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't even allow porn in the house. She wouldn't go to the Playboy Mansion. So I finally broached the question with Amy, and I was so scared, sweating bullets, and she said, okay, I've never seen one.
Hmm.
What do they look like? And I picked the wrong one, so she was appalled. But then I put in another one, and she liked it.
Well, the thing about...
So how do you get a girl that might want to a little, not go crazy, not go swinging, mm-hmm. but want to step it up but doesn't want to look trampy? How does she say to her boyfriend, hey, I'm willing to try this, I'd like that?
Well, first off, the answer to the question, bringing porn into the house, I bring porn into churches, funerals, into work.
House of worship.
You cannot stop me because I have millions of hours in my brain.
Oh, ah. At funerals, I really
wherever remember. I go, taxi cabs, department stores, right. synagogues.
It's like
you
YouTube.
Can't stop the Ace Man from bringing the porn in. Yes, it is. It is like an iPod or something. There's thousands of downloads in there. You can't stop me. So wherever I am, let it be known, porn is with
you.
Me. Porn
right.
is with me.
Thank you. Why don't we take
and
a 5-minute break?
Yeah, they say that about God, but right. for me, it's right. porn. Wherever I go to a funeral of a fallen soldier, porn is there.
It's your co-pilot.
Thank you. Yeah, how do you get someone to experiment without stepping out of their boundaries? Here's what I can tell you with women. A little experimenting is fine. If you start pushing and you feel like you're manipulating them and they're doing more than they're comfortable with...
Yeah.
That will be the worst day of your life.
Yep.
Actually, that day will be the best day of your life. The rest of your life will be the worst day of your life.
Right.
You talk a chick into doing something that she doesn't want to do in the bedroom, you're going to have fun for 15 minutes, and then you will pay the fiddler for the rest of your relationship.
I
because
agree.
She will feel dirty and manipulated. So don't bother. If they want to do something, great. If you can push it to the edge... then do it with candles and rose petals in a bath.
Yes,
but if you do that, come on, baby. Just come on. Why don't be uptight?
I'm on the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, you are. Hey, Tom.
You sure are. Doing a great job.
Tom from Fresno.
Oh, hey, how's it going, Adam?
What's happening, Tom?
You people are rednecks.
What do you got?
I work in construction, so I work a lot, Adam.
And times.
I work a lot, and I go home. I was thinking maybe I should hit on my landlord's daughter, but I don't know if that would get me in trouble with the landlord because I got a big fish tank in my apartment, and I'm not really supposed to.
Yeah.
Did you get that for your bar mitzvah?
Fresno construction labor
fish tank
exotic fish living apartment. T's just doing the Jewish man.
Right, it's obvious.
Definitely not a Jew.
You know what? I don't say hi. I say hi.
Hey, hey, Tom.
So once
they find out about your 50-gallon exotic salt tank, you might be dumped out of the crappy apartment you're in?
Yeah, I also kind of have a girlfriend. And, I mean, she's a nice girl, but I don't know if I'm ready to settle down.
All right, here's what I would say. There's a few things, because I was a renter for many years. It's always weird, too. You're renting a place. It's your house. But if someone comes in and finds a cat in it, they get to throw you out.
Yeah.
It's a strange, strange thing. I don't think our forefathers could have anticipated this.
No.
I'm an atheist. I care about feelings. I don't care about who's going to judge me. I care about me judging me. If you're not in your girlfriend, you should break up with your girlfriend. Anything you do before the age of 30, maybe 35, as long as you don't get anyone pregnant and you don't pick up any STDs you can't get rid of, and you don't scar your mind with the memory of destroying someone else's life, fine. Have your fish tank. Who cares? Nail the landlord's daughter. Who cares? Don't get the landlord's daughter pregnant. Don't nail the landlord's daughter and then get your girlfriend pregnant. Don't not be in love with your girlfriend and get your girlfriend pregnant. Don't get some sort of venereal disease that you can't get rid of from the landlord's daughter. Nothing permanent. I mean, look, we've all been S-canned from jobs, relationships. We've all graduated schools we never want to go back to. We've all lived in crappy apartments we're never going to go back to. As long as you didn't burn in a fire in that crappy apartment on Laurel Canyon where you and the Wheeze were bunking up on the same futon in a very plutonic and straight way. As long as we never perished in a fire, then it's just a bad and sometimes funny memory. That's all really anything is, and then you have kids, and then you get married.
And then life is over.
And then life is over. So, anything you do, go ahead and do it. If you're not in your girl, I would break up with her. But if you want to screw around with the landlord's daughter, I'll have at it. Oh, those are some of the worst people in the world. The landlords, the ones that manage the apartment buildings.
Yeah, I was wondering if he lived on the premises.
Oh, it's they're always wearing windbreakers.
I live in the back of their house in a little studio apartment. Mm-hmm. But I had to let them know that I have a shotgun. So they don't really come around too much. But I'm just worried if she would say to their parents that that I have a fish tank.
Listen, buddy, you're in a guest house at a grown age in the back where you feel it necessary to mention to your landlord because of their daughter that you're heavily armed. You have a lot bigger problems than whether somebody mentions or not you have a tiger fish in your living room.
Fish tank.
I don't know. The world is filled with women. Why sleep with one that could get you thrown out of your beautiful apartment?
The aquarium is filled with other fish.
I agree, yes.
There's more fish in the aquarium.
That's right. We need to take ourselves a break, but I'm not done yet. We got Felicia's husband is cheating while
she's in the Navy.
While she was in boot camp. We've got someone who's addicted to online video gaming, but it's the wife that's addicted. Mm. And many, many other questions. We'll address it next. 866-901-ADAM.
This is the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser. With an early critique of this morning's show, here's our program director, Jack Silver.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me, peeps? Today, we'll play another round of Will Angie Eat It, the star of Welcome Back, Kotter, Gabe Kaplan, and the director of Halloween, Rob Zombie. Hey, has anyone ever actually seen Gabe Kaplan and Rob Zombie in the same room together? I'm just saying, peeps, think about it. It'll blow your f***ing minds, man.
Thank you, Jack. Call 866-901-ADAM. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, Louise, Lewis, what is that?
Luis.
What's happening, Luis?
Come on, man. You got a lot of Hispanic people down there. You should know how to say that.
A lot.
Hey, I just had a quick question for each of you. Is the Adam Carolla project going to come out on DVD, or are they going to replay it or do something?
It's a good question. It's a show that everyone who saw it liked it, but not that many people saw it because they wouldn't rerun it and they wouldn't do the marathons of it. Whenever they do those reality shows, they always run the marathons on the weekends, and that's usually how I get onto them.
Yeah.
They're normally on it Tuesday at 10 o'clock, and I don't see them once a week, but then I find them on a Sunday, and I watch 18 of them in a row, and all of a sudden, it's Adam, Meet Your New Love, Blowout. That's what happens. They wouldn't run my show any time except for once a week because they said the content was too racy.
What?
Don't get me started. You know,
was this on TLC?
Yeah, it was on, I guess it was on TLC. And we do, you know, it's like, you know, 1 minute you see a 400-pound goiter being removed from a South African woman in all its glory, and that's fine. And the next minute, my buddy Ray makes a gay joke, and they go, well, that can't be run. That can be rerun again. So they labeled our show as too racy, thus they never ran it. They ran it once a week at its one time slot, and everyone who saw it went, wow, we love that show. Why don't they rerun it more? When's it coming out on DVD, or when are you doing another season? And it was just immediately gone. So it's something I don't know about. I've never checked into it. I don't know. Something happened. There's a story that I never got the answer to. There are life things that work that way. I did Letterman 8 or 9 years ago. I kicked ass on Letterman. I was as funny as I've ever been on a show. And I wasn't asked back for about 7 years. And then I went back. I knew a guy who used to work at Letterman, and he kept saying, what's the story? There's a story here. You don't just come on a show,
kick ass.
Right. And then, by the way, have your career continue, show, love line, all that kind of stuff, and never get asked back. There's a story. I don't know what it is. There's a bunch of those in Hollywood. I don't know what it is. Sometimes it's as simple as the wife of the guy who runs the network looking at the show and saying, I'm offended by it. Yeah. Or I hate it, or I don't like it, or giving a thumbs up. And sometimes it's sponsors, and sometimes it's complicated, and sometimes it's happenstance. I don't know what it is. That show was beloved by the people who saw it. Everyone wants to know what's going on with it. I was proud of it. I liked it. I don't say that about everything I've done. And it just went away, and it was never spoken of again. So I don't know what the story is. I will look into it, though, Luis, and I will see if they somebody will deliver that thing on a DVD.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's great. I just got one quick question for Teresa.
Yeah.
There's a fantasy football commercial where the guy's getting married. Is that you in the background in the wedding dress?
No, but I have been asked that before, so we must look alike.
And the newer one that's out.
What is with the Jew?
Felicia?
Yes?
You're in the Navy?
Yes, I am.
And your husband cheated on you while you were in boot camp?
He sure did.
Mm.
Felicia, how'd you find out?
He told me, actually. The
singing telegram.
Guy dressed up as a gorilla.
No, I got a phone call home, and that's when he decided to tell me that he had met somebody, and later on I found out he actually did the deed.
Okay, when people decide to tell you on their own accord, not you getting busted, but when they decide to tell you they've met somebody, they're asking for an out.
Right.
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 So he's asking out of the relationship. Did you let him out?
He had told me that he wanted to work on us and he wanted to still be together. I gave him another chance and he ended up doing it again. This time he got her pregnant.
And you're still with the guy?
No, we're separated. We've been separated since March, but he still wants to be together, and yeah.
Do you have kids, Felicia?
Yes, we do.
Okay,
shocking.
Let me just see if I've got the math on this right, because I've been learning radio math from Mr. Carolla and Ms. Schlosser since I've been here, and that is, we'll take one lady, add a cheating husband who has been caught and confessed.
Twice.
Who has professed that he will never do it again, not only did it again, but made a far worse choice and got the girl pregnant. Still together, the math equals, now this is future math. I don't know whether it's that trigonometry, but it comes out.
It's a projection.
It comes out, the projection comes out, he does it again, except this time shoots the lady, and then he comes home to you and escalates from there. This guy's taking a really ugly road with you. He's going to see how much you'll take, and when you're completely destroyed at best, and I've done this and I'm ashamed of it, at best when you are a shell of the decent, strong human being you used to be, then he'll leave. If you stay and you're still in the relationship where he escalates bad, somebody's going to get hurt, and I'm guessing physically.
Hang on a second, Felicia, because we're running late for break, but I don't want to give you short shrift here because this is important.
My name is not short shrift. It's Danny.
We'll take, I don't want to give you a red shrift on this one. We'll take a quick break. T'll have the news loaded up, and we'll finish up with Felicia's dilemma next.
Still coming up this morning from Welcome Back Cotter, Gabe Kaplan, Adam's buddy Ray's in the studio for another reenactment. We'll do some classic calls from the Crank Anchor's vault, and Rob Zombie's in the studio to discuss the new horror flick Halloween. Call 866-901-ADAM. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
All right, we have the news to get to, but I felt bad leaving Felicia dangling in the wind. She's a Navy gal. She was at boot camp. Husband cheated. Then he cheated again. Yeah, he was at booty camp. She was at boot camp. Then he got the other chick pregnant. This guy's a pile of crap.
Yep.
Felicia, and the only thing I can figure out is that your father must have been a pile of crap. What did he do? Cheat on your mom? Did he knock somebody up? Did he have a family outside of your family?
Not that I am aware of. They got divorced when I was around 4 years old. So,
because he got someone pregnant.
Well, did you see much of him after that?
I did. They split us up pretty evenly. But around 15, when I was 15, that's when I actually moved in with my mom, because my dad and I just couldn't, you know, we didn't get along after that.
Sure. She wouldn't put out. So now how's your relationship with your dad?
We don't talk. We don't speak.
Why not?
It just, we had a big blowout when I was like 15 years old, and since then just haven't spoken. We're both stubborn like that.
How old are you now?
I'm 21.
I like when people have a lot of pride with their kids that way. You know what I mean?
They're not going to surrender after half a decade.
My kid insulted me in 1987, and it's been 35 years. We don't speak.
Wait, so you're only 21?
Yes.
How many kids do you have with this pile of crap?
I have one little girl. She's going to be 2 in... Actually, she just turned 2.
All right, so here's your job. Divorce this guy. He's a pile of crap. And believe me, this is just the beginning of his reign of semen terror.
Yeah.
He's going to knock up a bunch of other guys. I hate these guys. They are a scourge upon society. People think I'm kidding. They cause more damage than your average drunk driver or average murderer. They go around and knock up people, and kids are born out of wedlock, and they're born into poverty, and they're born without self-esteem, and that makes them much more susceptible to predators. And next thing you know, we have another Felicia on our hand, except for she's 15 and pregnant. So, Felicia, here's your job. Two jobs. A, get away from this guy. B, don't raise your kid to come out like you. You're a good person. It's just your self-esteem is so poor that you think it'd be a great idea to join the Navy and hook up with this serial humper. All right? And I don't want you to let another fox into the hen house until this guy's been cleared. I don't want another guy who comes in and thinks it's a good idea to cheat. You see, her yardstick is bent. She's not good at measuring people.
Right, absolutely.
She's going to think the next guy's a catch. She's going to be attracted to the next guy. And that next guy is either going to screw around on her outside of the house or, worse yet, take a pass at her daughter.
If you're a bad guy, and I know some guys that have been in their day, nothing screams, let me in easy, like a single desperate mother. When you can smell the desperation on them, and all the tag and axe in the world won't cover it.
Mm-mm.
You can move right on in. So what I want you to do, seriously, hit the books, just have something interesting to say that you didn't have to say yesterday. Take care of your body, get in decent shape, be an interesting person, and you're a 21-year-old girl that has a kid they take care of, and that's somebody to be proud of. I would not flee into the night because a young woman had a child and made a mistake when she was earlier. If that woman, on her own, one of the people I admire most, worked 16 hours a day because she made a mistake when she was 19 and is raising the most polite young man I know, and I would not run from that woman. But if you stay what you are and you let these beasts in your door to impregnate you again, you're going to end up the thing Adam hates the most, in a house with filthy carpets and kids all around running around the house in diapers when they're 9 years old. Educate yourself, stay in shape, and people will admire how hard you had to work.
And the next, the more you know, I think, and the next relationship you should have is the one between you and your daughter. Stay away from guys for a few years. You're not ready. Your judgment is bad, and that's not going to be fixed in a couple of months. Steve?
Yes.
Your wife won't have sex with you?
Well, when I ask for it and she says no, I wouldn't mind just popping one off, you know, myself.
Yeah.
But she gets offended by that.
Yeah,
leave her.
I know, because it's during breakfast. I mean, so here's the thing: a lot of guys do this. Got to get to tease news. A lot of guys do that thing where they go, "Hey, can I have some loving?" And the chick goes, "No, I'm not in the mood." And they go, "All right, well then I'll just have to take care of myself." There's two types of masturbation. There's the, I'm going to go run the shower and make you think I'm doing something else, and I'm going to quietly masturbate. And then there's the, you won't give me sex? All right. Well, then I will set up bleachers, invite some of your family members over, lay down the Visqueen, and have a little masturbation session in front of God and everyone. There's the vengeance masturbation. Right. What's the third?
If you won't give it to me, I'll get it somewhere else.
That ain't masturbation.
Yeah. I thought we were going down the list of threats.
The threat? Nope. Only about masturbation. Sorry. So a lot of guys do that. I'm going to masturbate if you won't, which is basically saying, you won't please me, I'll please myself, and I'll try to shame you in front of you while I'm doing it. If your wife isn't giving you sex, there's an issue there. When most women like
I
you...
I agree completely.
Here's what I will say, and you guys disagree if you disagree. There are women that like sex, and if they like you, they like sex, and you'll get it. And those women will even give you sex if they don't like you because they like sex so much.
Then, I didn't know there were chicks like that.
There are out there.
It's a new thing for me. I'm old.
Then there are chicks who don't like sex that much, but they like you.
You, right?
Now, you get a chick who doesn't like sex that much and doesn't like you, you get no sex. And when you try to talk that chick into more sex that she doesn't want to have because she doesn't like you, then you get even less than zero. And when you go, F it, I'm masturbating now, you get minus sex. You create some sort of sexual vacuum that even if you had sex once, it would count as zero. Right. So your only chance to get a chick who doesn't really like sex, like this guy's wife, into right. having sex with him is to get her to like you enough to go, I will have sex with you because I like you, well, not sex. And threatening her with masturbation is not the way to go.
I happen to know a woman who doesn't like sex and has about $3 million and will be legally single in about two more weeks.
Mm.
So I can tell you where to look if you want another one.
I don't think he wants another one.
The money helps.
T?
Believe me.
Yeah.
You depressed? You want to do your news?
Yeah.
You want to take a break? Do you want to try to get back? Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just quickly, because now I feel bad for this guy's wife is playing online video games. Let's
all
just
right.
mop up with this guy, Jordan, and then we'll do the news. Jordan?
Yeah.
Your wife can't stop playing Warcraft?
Yeah, I showed it to her a few months before we got married, and now she spends way more time on there than I do.
You're that nerd.
You rarely hear about this.
You rarely hear about this.
Mm. Woman addicted to video games. Does she have addictive personality?
She says she doesn't, but she spends ridiculous amount of time on the internet, even if it's not on a video game.
Is she ignoring other things like your kids or the house?
Or food?
Or food?
We don't have
hygiene.
Any kids. She claims that she can't cook, doesn't know how to cook, but she also just doesn't want to know how to cook because I can cook and I've offered to show her what to do.
Yeah.
I know it's not romantic, but because we hear this in reverse a great deal, my husband won't stop playing video games and the wife feels neglected. Now, I'm thinking with you, you feel a little neglected, but you turned around to the game, so you do, in fact, like this game, right?
I do, but the thing is I mean, I work a graveyard shift driving a tow truck. She works in a fabric store.
You have limited time together, I understand. But do you, in fact, like the game? Is it a nice game?
To me, it's a video game.
Okay, could she still play well?
Say yes.
Instead of thank you. Instead of sitting on the couch, do you think she could play well? And I know it's going to sound gratuitous, but I've had to work in 18 years of marriage with sexual dysfunction. I've had to work some things out, and I mean this seriously. Do you think she could play reasonably well instead of sitting on the couch, bent over it? I'm not kidding. Could she use her joystick?
Dr. Phil with an F.
If you were reasonably gentle, can she still play her game while you met certain needs of your own?
Danny Bonaducci is like a beautiful mind with sexual dysfunction. He's coming up with alternate solutions.
Here's the problem.
Governing dynamics.
Not, it's not alternate solutions. There's only one solution.
It's a great solution.
Sex.
Right.
That's all the solution is. Now, how can we get it, whatever the problem is? There's only one solution, and it's always sex.
But, Jordan,
in my world.
All right, would she let you do that?
Well, the thing is, our sex life is not even an issue.
My next question was, he wasn't asking about sex. He was basically saying she is distracted.
You want to hang out
and
with her?
Addicted
him.
To, whenever you get a call about my husband is addicted to video, it's this woman's getting no attention at all.
Look, at a certain point, and this is why you shouldn't get married so goddamn early, everyone, you realize I may be married to a loser. I mean, married to a person that doesn't do anything, that doesn't have any interest, that has no intellectual capacity, that loves to play video games all day and is ignoring me. Jordan.
Yeah.
You don't have kids.
No.
You are allowed to demand things.
Yes, you are.
You really are.
You have rights.
And you're going to have to provide some sort of alternative other than her playing video games, but she may be depressed. I would assume she's depressed. When people sort of go off into their own world and they stay there for extended periods of time and they don't like to go outdoors and they don't have tons of friends and they don't have a bunch of distractions, they're depressed. It masks itself because she's playing video games all day, but she's depressed.
Do you think that's a symptom of her being depressed, Jordan?
Well, she says that it's her only social outlet.
Uh-oh.
All right. She's depressed.
There you go.
Now, either get her some friends or a gun, because I want to settle this. T.
Yeah.
The news. What's coming up in it, baby girl?
Oh, well, Great White, they made a very ill-conceived dedication at a concert recently.
Was that the band that had the fire?
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I have a recording of it, and perhaps more disturbing, David Hasselhoff sang last night.
Oh, with his buddy Jack?
America's Got Talent, number one, once again, in America.
When people who have no talent for something insist on sharing that talent with large groups, they are delusional blowhards.
You got to hear him.
That's what Hasselhoff is. Yeah. Obviously, delusional blowhard because he can't sing to save his effing life, and yet every show he's on, he begs to sing. How many times do you have to hear people arguing with you about not singing for you just to go F it?
Right.
You know what I mean? How many producers... If you're Jim Belushi, how many segment producers do you have to talk to who go, let's leave the band in the van. We just come out and do a talk segment. How many times do you have to hear that before you realize, perhaps... We're not the world's greatest.
But, Adam, you know it's a great song.
Do you think that happens with Pearl Jam?
No.
Do you think Eddie Vedder goes on like Jimmy Kimmel goes, hey, Jimmy, this is awesome. I'm going to bring the band out. We're going to play like three big songs in the backstage. And Jimmy goes, let's just do a talk segment, Eddie.
How about a sketch?
Yeah. I mean, how many conversations do you think Hasselhoff has had with the producer of Ellen, with the segment producer Kimmel, Leno, where he goes, hey, man, I could do a number. And they go, you know, the studio's not really set up for. Do you think when Sinatra said that, they went, Frankie, let's just do a little sit down. Nobody needs to hear my way again. Okay? Thank you. Oh, for the love of Christ, I can't wait to dig into this. All right, we'll do the news next.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Titusville, Florida. A 77-year-old man stopped an attempted convenience store robbery by beating the would-be robber with a bar stool. Definitely not a Jew.
It was a convenience store?
Yeah, an inconvenience store.
Yeah. For the guy robbing it. And a bar stool, that is the biggest keychain I've ever heard of. Where do you find a bar stool at a convenience store? And it's, yes.
So right. They won't steal the bathroom key.
Right. I see. They can't fit the bar stool into the car.
That grosses me out when the bathroom key is connected to like some huge spatula.
Dude, at the gas station when it's hooked to a wheel.
Yes.
And you've got to drag it through the thing. I hate that.
I know. Oh, what a day.
Coffee bars, I won't say which one, but are all of them maybe, the key is hooked to a ridiculously oversized Paul Bunyan coffee mug.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like, how bad do you think I want your bathroom key?
I know. So yeah. Sad.
And then you have to do the handoff when someone's got the festering, diseased spatula with the key, and they're coming out, and you're like, hey, can I have that?
All the big city living, all the perks of the big city living, because I must tell you, I drove through Wisconsin with Dr. Drew once on the way to some gig, and we had to pull over and take a leak at some 7-Eleven, and there was some freckled-faced white girl with blonde hair standing behind the counter. We walked in, and like, she was like, howdy! And we were like, huh? And she's like, howdy! And we're like, look, we're not buying anything, sweetie. I don't know what you want. Where's your Lexan, by the way? I don't understand you without 3 inches of bulletproof Lexan. She's like, how you guys doing? And we're like, what's going on? Some kind of hidden camera show? What's with the greeting when we walk in? I thought we were just supposed to get the steely-eyed stink eye that the foreigners usually give us. And then we're like, look, can we use your bathroom? She's like, sure you can. I'm like, okay, sweetie. Don't crack wise with me. Don't patronize me. Now, how much? Drew, peel off a couple of 20s. Let's see if that loosens her up. And she's like, bathroom's over there. Use it. And I was like, oh, my God. We both just stared at each other. Like, what is going on? There's a friendly white person who's working behind the counter, says we can use their facilities. What is going on? This must be some kind of police thing we've walked into. And then I realize how effed up Los Angeles is.
I take it you're a virgin.
So please understand all the people that are listening that are not living in Los Angeles, whose life dream it is to move to Los Angeles to become a great screenwriter, an actor, whatever, a model. Let me just lay something out. There is less than 1% chance you will ever realize your dreams of stand-up comedy or writing for a sitcom. There is a 110% chance that you will get the stink eye from somebody from some country you've never heard of who's behind behind the counter in every place you go. And there's a 99% chance that if you ever pull over and ask anyone for directions anywhere, they will A, not speak English, and B, have no idea about the place you're talking about because they're from another place and they came here to be a model too. So be prepared for nothing. Be prepared for abuse and no career.
By the way, when the foreigner is done giving you directions that are wrong, it won't matter because our streets don't move.
That's right.
You're not going to get anywhere.
The good news is you should have gone left out of the driveway of the Arco station after the guy gave you the stink eye through the 6 inches of Lexan. You should have gone left. You did turn right because he told you it was the other way. But like Danny says, you'll only be moving about 20 feet an hour, so yeah, you'll never go too far in the wrong direction. T? Come on out to Los Angeles. And by the way, enjoy the copious amounts of graffiti on every effing freeway sign we have. Nothing makes you feel better as a motorist or a taxpayer than when you pass freeway signs that are just scribbled out with graffiti. Fantastic. Nice job, Ragosa. Keep it up, buddy. You're doing a great job. When you roll off that reporter from Telemundo, perhaps we can focus on these issues. Eventually, he's going to come up with air. When you hit your refractory period, when you're done banging reporters from Telemundo via Ragosa and you come up during your refractory period, maybe we could do something about the piles of trash and the graffiti that are all over this town. All right.
See.
Yeah, that's right. Put another camera up at a signal, you pussy. Go ahead, T. I'm not angry.
I'm just upset because my modeling career dreams are crushed.
Right.
Today.
Here's a guy who's really upset. Coal mine boss Bob Murray. You've seen a lot of him in the news lately since that mine collapsed. Well, in the middle of the night, he woke up and had a 12-minute middle-of-the-night phone call with the Associated Press. The 67-year-old man is having a bit of a meltdown. He told the AP that since the second collapse, the one that killed the three rescue workers, that he's had to be under a doctor's care, that he broke down. He talked about the night of that second collapse. He said that he personally rushed in his street clothes. He began digging out the men who were buried under 5 feet of coal with his bare hands. And then around 3 a.m. that night, he said he just started to wander around the mine yard in the moonlight and relive the collapse. And he said he had a breakdown. He's very angry. He's very angry at the union. He's upset at the media. He feels he's been discredited. He feels the story's been twisted. He feels the mine was safe and he's being blamed. It's not his fault.
Well, he wants the mine to reopen. Family's like, well, if you're going to start digging, how about you start heading in the direction of our loved ones that are entombed 1,000 feet under the earth? And he's like, well, we like to dig for some coal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand he wants to make money. For the love of Christ, let's just get a nuclear power plant and knock it off already.
For God's sakes.
How many more holes do we have to dig? Don't get me started on all this stuff. I hate everyone this morning.
Do you hate Great White?
I didn't. I felt bad for them after their tragedy, and then they came in here and they were really nice.
They were very nice.
Why?
Guys.
What happened with them?
Well, here's what happened, and someone finally came through with some audio of it. Now, as everyone knows, Great White had some ill-conceived fireworks concert. A lot of people died, and that was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still playing with their remaining band members. That fire was at the Station nightclub. 100 people were killed back in 2003.
Right.
So they were at a concert in Columbus, Ohio, at the same club where Dimebag Daryl Abbott was shot and killed in 2004. I don't know if you remember Dimebag.
I do remember Dimebag.
He was once in Pantera, and someone shot him while he was on stage.
I remember Lid and Kilo. A nickel bag, but I don't remember Dimebag.
Yeah, Dimebag.
Dating yourself, Lid. Mr. Lid.
Lid.
I know. How about this? You ever buy a can?
No, what's a can?
Can's a lid.
Can's a lid. Oh, the lid, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. No, I didn't know. Well, anyway, Dimebag got shot and killed?
At this very club. So now, Great White is about to do a show at a club where another tragedy took place, this shooting. So they kind of tried to tie in their tragedies and perhaps it wasn't the best idea. I don't know. You tell me. Here is Great White at their show in Ohio.
This show I'd like to dedicate to all our friends we lost in Rhode Island and our good buddy Dimebag Darrell, who's up in the coming crowd. He's probably playing a concert for those motherfuckers right now by himself. I just want to say God bless you, Mom, and we miss you. We love you. This show's for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Dimebag Darrell is playing a concert for those who lost their lives in Rhode Island.
Right, but you're taking the exception to, he said, he's playing a concert for those MFers right now. Nah, that's rock and roll speak.
That's just rock and roll
speak,
right?
He wasn't saying anything like, I'm insensitive to the people
right.
who perished
he's
at all.
He's just calling them MFers to be rock and roll's
parlance.
Yeah,
yeah. Parlance. Yeah, didn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
He's
fine.
He's fine. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He gets the pass of all three of us. He must be fine, because there's somebody in this room that should want him dead, and none of us do.
No,
he's
I
good.
Think his heart was in the right place.
Yeah. No, I'm all right.
I
felt bad about the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
Look, when somebody does something, you know, if we find out Michael Vick was involved with dogfighting, then I want Michael Vick strung up. If we find out that it was Michael Vick's buddies who lived in a house and Michael Vick, the name on the deed was Michael Vick, but Michael Vick had nothing to do with it, then I'm going to feel bad for Michael Vick.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, I won't cry for him, but I'll feel bad for him. It's like when somebody punches their maid, then they get sued and they deserve it. When their maid punches the gardener, they still get sued.
Yeah.
But I don't feel bad. I don't want the person to do time. We live in a society where we hate Great White or Great sure. White is responsible for some pyrotechnics guy fired up something in a club that was not up to code. It has nothing really to do with the band.
Yeah.
Right.
It has everything to do with the club owner, the fire marshal, and whoever the pyrotechnics guy is. Yet we blame them for the loss of 100 people. People, well, and I
weird.
Feel bad for them.
Do you think it is maybe the time, or I don't remember correctly, but I believe I do. Is it the novelty that it was Great White, or has this gotten more ink for longer than the Trampling Deaths at the Who concert of well over a decade and a half ago?
Well, the Trampling Deaths were only like 9 people or something. I don't think there were in the kind of numbers.
Right, over 100
that this
people.
Is. And that was in, yeah, what, mid-70s, early
Who.
70s.
They're not Great White.
Yeah, you know what it is? We didn't have 1,000 cable
and
stations and
fire
in all the outlets and what we have today. Now everything's big, depending on if there's anything going on or not.
When you and I can both get on Scarborough, the world is in a bad place.
Very, very true.
Well, how
Sad
good a place is the world in when David Hasselhoff is one of its favorite singers?
Mm.
He's had number one hits in many countries,
mm-hmm.
Switzerland, Germany. And now he's one of the judges on America's Got Talent, which has been the number one show almost every week this season that it's been on. Of course, that High School Musical 2 thing, you know, almost doubled the numbers of America's Got Talent, but that's on cable. On the networks, America's Got Talent has dominated. Last night was the finale. I know you guys care, the ventriloquist one, Terry Fader.
I actually don't mind a good ventriloquist.
I don't either.
As long as they're good.
Country singing ventriloquist.
No, this guy would do like Roy Orbison's
Well, he sung, his dummy should
his
really
dummy.
Have gotten the award.
Yes.
His dummy is the one who did all the work.
Good point.
His dummy sung country songs, I think, and he... So anyway, my two great loves are ventriloquism and country music. So it really was combining my two greatest passions in life.
He would do impressions.
I know these sound similar, but my two great passions are ventriloquism, quinism, and prop comedy. You get me a good ventriloquist and Carrot Top on the same stage, I'm home for hours at a time.
Well, if you saw my place looking like Roy Rogers' house meets Edgar Bergen...
Wow.
It's a shrine to Charlie McCarthy and Nudies. Nudies was an old Western outfitter's place. Okay.
Right. I don't know what you're talking
I'm
about.
I'm done making inane references.
Because I was all time mixed up.
David Hasselhoff marked the occasion of the finale with some fantastic singing. Here he is with This Is the Moment.
This is the moment. Is the day when I send all my doubts and demons on their way. Every endeavor I have made ever is coming into play. It's here and now, today. This is the moment.
It's the moment we learned you can't sing.
What
couldn't
the
they
bloody
just,
hell
couldn't they just
was
dug,
that?
Couldn't they just dug up Burt Parks and thrown his corpse on stage
you
and put a
Miss
live
America
on it?
Dude?
Yes. Yes, he would always go, here she is, Miss America. Yes.
Hey, wait a second. Didn't some a-hole on the show yesterday revoke my singing privileges?
Yeah, some caller said you weren't allowed to sing anymore.
Well, until we know his name and he's some caller, I'm still doing it.
Do you want to sing a little This Is the Moment?
No, because there's only one singer worse than me, and his name's Hasselhoff, and I'm letting him go.
Merv Griffin sounds better right now.
But he's...
As a singer. Merv couldn't sing a lick when he was alive.
But he could lick when he was alive.
But now, he sounds better than Hasselhoff. Oh, what a colossal, monumental blowhard this guy is. He just with the shirt unbuttoned to the navel and the chains and the don't hassle the Hoff. And he's so delusional about his talent. I mean, wait a minute.
I didn't know I see them.
I know the time has come to prove to them I'm me.
Doing a parody of a horrible lounge act, right. Then it's really funny. If he's halfway serious, he needs to go back into rehab because he must be high.
Every body posture he hits with every note when he's cracking his voice, he's doubled over in one, making that claw hand thing while holding the mic with the other. I'm sorry, dude. But thanks for bringing down the wall.
And look, the only reason this guy's huge in other countries is because they're trying to piss us off. Mm-hmm. I stumbled onto this theory a few years ago, and I'm now starting to believe it more and more with each passing day. It's like, what the hell are those Germans thinking? France, they just made another shrine to Jerry Lewis. So don't they realize what we think of that guy? They know.
Yeah.
They know there's nothing that would piss off the blue-eyed American devil more than them loving the Hoff and having his record go to number one each time he... Let's listen to one of Hoff's hits, another one of Hoff's hits.
Jump in my car.
What's his car's name? Kip?
Kit.
Yes. Yeah. Was claimed by vehicular aids in the late 80s.
Full-blown vehicular aids?
Full-blown vehicular aids in the 80s.
Did he get rear-ended?
Oh, that's David.
I think he was rear-ended by Miata. He says oil transfusion.
Either way.
He said he was down low some 30 weight and went to a bad part of town and got an oil transfusion. Either way, if Kit was around, if Kit had not been claimed by vehicular aids in the late 80s, he would be shedding a single tear of transmission fluid listening to this blowhard hack bore America with his crappy singing.
You actually missed a little of that story. That's not what he said. He said he got a bad tranny. And that's how he
cries. I see.
Now, look, you want to know, what do I have against Hasselhoff? Nothing.
Nothing.
I have nothing against Hasselhoff. He is a mediocre to poor singer. He is delusional and insists on sharing that with America. Thus, it makes him an egomaniac, because anyone who can't do anything and wants everyone to see them not doing it is a delusional egomaniac, and thus, I don't like him. All right, give us the last one.
Okay, I will make it brief. Now, if I told you that I had a story involving boating, a beer bong, a 21-year-old, and it took place in a place called Crestview, what state might you guess?
Let me think. Florida.
Maine.
That's right, Florida.
Ah, you're so smart.
Damn.
A 21-year-old from Crestview, Florida, in the Panhandle, his name has not been released, was boating with some friends when disaster struck.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington.
His beer bong went overboard.
Uh-huh.
And he thought, you know what? I've got to go in after it.
Sure.
That's my beer bong.
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
So he jumped off the boat and tried to rescue it.
Things going to Davy Jones' liquor store.
An hour later... The guy's friends had to get in touch with his dad because they'd lost track of the 21-year-old guy. They didn't know where he was. He was down in Davy Jones' liquor store looking for his lost beer
bong. But he was using the beer bong as a snorkel and making his way toward the houseboat sorority girls and walking on the bottom of the lake.
Well, his dad had to call the police and report him missing.
Definitely not a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many men in movies, the beautiful romance where they die in the arms of their lover?
Yes.
That's totally what happened here. This is a romantic story. Yeah, this isn't a tragedy. Mm-hmm. This man went just the way he wanted to go.
That's right.
He didn't give up.
No.
Like Bob Murray from The Mine is accused of doing. He kept looking.
That's right.
And he looked, and he looked, and he swam. And he was lost.
Bob Murray had half the gumption that this young hero had. When he went into the lake after his beer bong, those men would be alive right now.
7 long hours passed.
Mm. 7 long hours he's been missing.
7 short hours that go by sometimes.
Right.
A manhunt ensued.
Mm-hmm.
Finally.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interview you when manhunt made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, he was found. He had swum to shore.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have his phone, so he couldn't call anyone to pick him up. He had planned to walk home. This took several hours. All in all, they found the man, but the man had not found his beer bong.
Mm.
He's going back. I'd put him on suicide watch right now.
He's going back in.
Yeah, he's going back in.
Well, this according to the Northwest Florida Daily News.
Mm.
It's not released his name, but he was very dedicated to finding his beer bong. And I'm sure if anyone finds it, they will forward it to this man.
Well, and when the Los Angeles Times doesn't report your name, it's because it's to protect you in some way. When the Florida newspaper doesn't report your name, it's because nobody knows it, including you.
Right.
I'm just some guy. Don't worry. It's fine. I might be wrong. Leave me be.
They didn't report his name?
His name has not been reported, even though he's 21 and of age.
Uh-huh.
So.
My name is Tyrone Washington.
I'm having a lot of work on a reporter's part in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
They're busy also seeing if they can find
him. Has the beer bong's family been contacted?
Been notified.
Mm.
Well, its first of kin was notified.
Next of keg.
I was thinking Mr. Flask.
I'm sure the deaf rat guy is broken up over this.
He's had to do a thing where he spills a little for his homies.
That's right. That's pours a little liquor for his homies.
When the beer bongs are lost at sea.
Deaf rat guy would not pour one drop of beer for his homies.
All right. We will observe 30 seconds of silence and then the ringing of the bell.
Or either that, my sign off. I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Tomorrow's news. Today, Teresa Strasser. CNN.
All right. Ah, Gabe Kaplan. Yes.
Awesome.
I introduced myself to Gabe a moment ago, and then I realized, oh, I've probably met Gabe Kaplan. And then I thought, maybe I just think I know him because I feel like I grew up with him. And now I just do all my, I've changed my nice to meet you to how you doing.
I know.
Because I've been burned way too many times by going, I was on your show 3 times. So,
wait, I'm going to go with nice to see you again and see if he goes with that.
Do that. Yeah, because you can't argue with see you again. Carter's back. It is emails from a faded celebrity to a bewildered world. The name of the new book, Gabe Kaplan, next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Welcome back.
This is The Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaducci, and Teresa Strasser.
I'm in school. The teacher says, Carter, stand up. I stand up. She says, who signed the Declaration of Independence?
What did you say?
I said, I don't know. But I know. I didn't sign it. She says, go home and get your father. Bring him into school the next day.
Uh-huh.
She said, Mr. Carter, watch this. Gabe, stand up. I stood up. She said, who signed the Declaration of Independence? I said, I don't know. But I know. I didn't sign it. She looks at my father. She says, you see that?
Well, what did your father say?
My father said, if he says he didn't sign it, he didn't sign it.
Gabe Kaplan on The Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you, Gabe.
Nice to be here.
I grew up, of course, as many of us did, watching Welcome Back, Carter, and which I called Carter for, well, I think Welcome Back, Carter and Star Trek, I think, are the two most mispronounced TV shows in history. Felt like Gabe just had a sort of easy, every man, you'd love this guy to be your dad or your uncle or, more importantly, your school teacher vibe to him. And he has that in real life, too. The show was conceived by you, the concept, school teacher, all that?
It was based on the kind of school I went to and the class I was in and the guys I went to school with. And I had talked about it on all the variety and late night talk shows. I say I was in this class and these were the guys I went to school with, and developing it for a television show. I said, well, how am I going to do this? Because actually we had the first concept I had was this group of guys that are about 28 years old. They all grew up together, mm-hmm. and they're the group that just never grows up. You know, they're doing the same things at 27 that they were doing at 17.
Right.
They all still live with their parents. They're still looking to go after girls. Their lives really basically haven't changed. And I thought, well, that's the group of guys that never grows up. Let's do a show about that. And the network kind of liked it, but it was focus problems on where the set is. They can't all live together, you know. And then we just one day said, well, just suppose I'm the teacher and these guys are my students. And that's how it happened.
Did you, when you met a 19-year-old John Travolta, did you say, this kid has it? This kid's going places?
It was pretty obvious.
And how old was he when you met him? Was he that age? Was he younger?
No, he was older.
He was older.
And didn't he have a much older wife at the time?
No, he was going out. You're talking about Diana Hyland.
Right.
Yes.
He was dating.
Yeah.
And she was the first wife on Eight Is Enough, I think.
Really?
That's right.
She played like his mom in The Boy in the Plastic Bubble.
Yes.
Right. That's how they met.
And then they were together.
Right.
She was quite a bit older.
Yeah, she was older.
And she died of, like, breast cancer or something. It was a horrible,
horrible
story.
Right.
But he was, what, in his 20s then when you hooked up with him?
Actually, we were pretty much the same age. I think he was the youngest, and Ron Palillo was the oldest. He was like
Horshack?
Horshack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was like,
he's almost your age, isn't he?
Right. He was like 2 years younger than me. And everybody was sort of, you know, it wasn't really a teacher-student type of thing. We're all pretty much the same age. But John started to get noticed right away. I remember like the second week, I was kidding around with him. I said, you know, you got a lot of fan letters in the in the office. You better go over there. And he said, really? I said, yeah. And there was no fan letters. And then the third week, there was a big burlap sack from the post office with thousands of letters. It took like 3 weeks, and then it just exploded.
Well, that was about the end of network in terms of no competition.
Right.
I mean, if you were on a hit show, everyone knew who you were.
Right.
Now, we're in a time and in a business where people get pitched to us all the time. They go, oh, he's from that TLC show, Revamp and Redo. And I'm like, I've never heard of that. Oh, this guy's a huge guy. This guy's a huge star.
Everybody
they get huge ratings and everyone knows this guy. And I'm like, I don't know this guy. Could you imagine growing up, when we were growing up, somewhere in the 70s, somebody going, this guy's on a huge TV show. And you're going, I've never heard of J.R. Ewing or the guy who plays him, or Gabe Kaplan or Mannix or whoever it is. You'd be like, of course I know that guy. Well, we have three channels.
Let me ask you this. When you hear that American Idol is a runaway phenomenon that can't be stopped, 22 million viewers watched. How many average viewers did Welcome Back Kotter have?
About 16.
About 16 million? And what year?
Point well made, Bonaducci.
I think, you know, when there was the three networks, you didn't have much of a choice.
Partners now had 40 million a week.
Really?
Yeah. And so, but it was 1970. We had ABC, CBS, NBC, and that was it. Not 900 channels.
Right. It was so different. And I like it better now, actually. I don't know.
It's good if you're watching TV. It's not as good if you're on TV.
I'm curious what's on Gabe Kaplan's TiVo.
Well, I'm like an old guy who likes a History Channel.
You know,
I like sports.
Mm-hmm.
I like movies.
Do you gamble on sports? I know you like playing poker and playing cards.
Is that a true thing? There's a lot of legends about Gabe Kaplan now. One is that you quit show business to become a professional gambler. Is that true?
No.
No.
I played, you know, I was the first celebrity to play in the poker tournaments.
Right.
And I did well, so that got started. But I never really have been a professional gambler. I play in a few tournaments now. Mostly I do the announcing on a show called High Stakes Poker.
Right.
And I like to bet on football.
Yeah.
I mean, football season, I'm there.
Who's your team?
Whoever I bet on.
Yeah.
No allegiances here.
Really? Yes.
Where did you go? You were the biggest star in America at the time. It's like once people like me and other people, they were, you know, they say, well, I took time off. No, we didn't. We couldn't get jobs. You were a huge star. Could have made millions in Vegas. You could have done anything you wanted. Why didn't you?
I know. You know, 30 years ago, I was a big television star. I woke up last month at a hotel in Valencia. I don't know what happened in those 30 years.
Well, you just make millions of dollars in Vegas, right? I mean, you probably played Vegas a ton over the years.
Investments, am I right?
Yeah. I got involved in the different financial markets. I really didn't get offered a lot of great stuff. Just like Danny says, you know, at some point you have a choice of if you want to continue in the business of doing whatever you're offered. And right. You either do that or you don't do it. And I chose it at that point not to do what they were offering. They weren't offering me anything great. Mm-hmm. You know? So, which is how this whole thing came about with me wanting to make a statement about this.
Well, what's the book about?
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it.
It
looks interesting.
Title. It's a great title.
Well, Danny could probably relate to this because he knows about celebrity boxing more than anybody. But
I had to turn down celebrity bull riding because my boss wouldn't let me. Swear to God.
Well, all these shows, like they come to Danny and they had all asked me to be on every time they had a nostalgia version of any of these shows. And I really didn't want to be on any of them. But I got an email from Celebrity Boxing. Danny had been on one. Ron mm-hmm. Polillo had been on one. And they said, I don't know what they paid you, but the first offer was $35,000 mm-hmm. for me to get in the ring with someone my own age and box. And they said they trained me for a week, and sure. I like to talk enough. About opponents. And everybody's
anyone who knows boxing or sports in general knows right. a week more
you
than enough time.
The boxing game, actually,
whether it's golf, bowling, or professional football, curling. You can turn pro in about 5 days.
Actually,
sure.
In a physical sport like boxing, a week or so is just enough to take away any natural ability you had.
Right,
because you'll just swing your arms to defend right. yourself. Within a week, they'll teach you to stop doing that, but not anything else. You'll just get hurt.
And right, by the way,
which
30,
is what happened
yeah.
with Ron Polillo.
Like, yeah, right. Still,
golf who did lesson. He fight?
You fighted Dustin Diamond.
6 foot two, black belt in karate, 25 years old.
It was the battle of the nerds, but one nerd was 10 inches taller and about 30 years younger than the
right.
other. So,
and he bragged. Mm-hmm. What a punk.
So I just didn't want answers because they wanted me to fight someone my own age, and mm-hmm. I didn't want to answer this seriously. So I thought I was making a statement, and I wrote back that I boxed all the time. In fact, they didn't have to train me because I travel with my own trainer and cut man. And that
he's got an entourage.
I'm looking for opponents.
Right. And you don't want a tomato can. You
no.
want somebody good.
Or you want a challenge.
I wanted a challenge, so I said I wanted to fight Conrad Bain. Mr. Drummond.
Right.
Different strokes.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
You'd show him some different strokes.
Yeah, I get him. And if he wasn't available, Adam West. Those are the two guys that I was looking to fight. And I said, one thing you have to be aware of is that I'd become a religious Jew and I would have to fight wearing a skull cap and a prayer
right,
shawl.
And not on Friday.
Oh, my God.
Right.
And not on Friday. So I hit send. And I thought, well, they're going to realize I don't want to do the show.
Right.
And I got a point-by-point answer to everything I opposed. They countered, said I could wear the skull cap but not the prayer shawl, that Adam West and Conrad Bain were too old. But what about Howard Hessman, who had also played a teacher? Would you fight him? And you could have your own cut man and your own trainer.
Yeah.
And then I said, how about if I have I want to do a public thing that like all the boxers do, like a press conference
right.
where me and Howard Hessman go at each other and try and
right, you try to yeah. bite him
before the
on
fight.
On the dais,
trash
yeah.
talk.
Right, I would trash talk.
And not on Shabbos.
right. Not, can't be on Saturday
no.
or Friday.
No.
So this went on for like four or five different exchanges, and at no point did they realize that I was putting them on.
Yeah.
And I said, there's something here because people will
That's
believe
brilliant,
anything about a celebrity they haven't seen on television for a while. And I said, how far can I push this envelope? And I started writing emails to different organizations, people with absurd premises.
Who else did you write to?
I wrote to the Postmaster General of the United States, and I said, I think I'm qualified to be the first living person to be on a stamp. And he said, well, you have to be dead. And I said, well, most people think I'm dead anyway, so can you put me on a stamp?
Gabe Kaplan's in studio, by the way, and the book is Now It Makes Sense, Emails from a Faded Celebrity to a Bewildered, I should say, World. Yeah, the problem with email, and I don't like using it, is people don't know when you're being sarcastic
yeah.
or not. And I've had many people go, he said I was the worst person he's ever met in his life. I don't know if he's serious. I don't know if
you
they're telling a joke.
You can't read the tone in the
email.
Yes,
there's no tone to them.
Well, once you know who you're getting the email from, you take it differently than if you're getting like a random email or something that you would consider spam. Some people didn't answer me because they didn't get into it. But the people that answered and accepted that it was me believed whatever I told them, especially if they thought they could make money from the proposition.
Which is the Fox celebrity boxer. That was Mike Darnell, right?
No, I don't want to say the name of the talent coordinator, but that wasn't him.
Oh, he's the head guy. But, I did his first one. He'll do anything for a buck.
Right. But, then, there was a guy, and he wanted to bring me in, because I think after the first two celebrity boxers, they were having trouble getting people to do a third one.
Right.
They couldn't find people. So when he thought that I was interested, and it was another show, Star Dates.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That you dated on successive nights two women. And they said, oh, I have a lot of fun. You go out on dates. It's great. You know, and I think it was a lot less than celebrity boxing, what they pay. But it was sort of just for exposure if you wanted to get the exposure. And I wrote them back. I would do it. But my lifestyle would indicate that I have to date both women at the same time and I have to have a threesome. Mm-hmm. So if everybody likes everybody, you can keep the cameras there and nobody would go home and then you could have, you know.
What did they say to this?
They were considering it. And then finally, is E! Television, they came back and
they said he could keep the prayer shawl on this
stuff. Right.
They said, but not the skull cap. Mm-hmm.
always wear a skull cap when you're having a three-way game.
When you're having a three-way, right? So they said, look, we decided we can't break with the formula. But all the different things that a celebrity might get into and all the things that people might believe about a celebrity – are all in there. There's like 48 different ones, and they're all kind of bizarre. I had to cut out a few that were really bizarre, and I asked permission from everybody who's in there, and there's no one in there who didn't want to be in there.
Can you talk about one of the bizarre ones that you had to cut out of your book?
Yeah. I'll talk about some of the people now. Most of the people in there, there's two or three who are known people, celebrities, who agreed to be in there. But most of the celebrities didn't want to be in there because they were fooled. And one of the people was Jerry Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
I had a long conversation with Jerry Falwell about televangelism and religion and politics. And nothing I said to him was serious, but he took everything I said seriously. And he was Jerry Falwell. So if you like Jerry Falwell, he sort of walked his walk.
Right.
He was himself. So you wouldn't be angry, but if you don't like him, everything that he stood for and everything that he said, you would find amusing. Mm-hmm. So, but when I contacted him and I said, look, Jerry, I wasn't serious with anything I said, he was very offended and sent me a lawyer's
letter.
Shocking,
a deeply religious man with no sense of humor.
But a lawyer.
Now, you know what's interesting is that a lot of people won't get now. Adam's a pretty big celebrity, but he's stayed there. He's stayed a certain level of game and even risen up the chain.
So I'm down a few notches.
So I'm going to ask Brian. Bob, Brian, how many Brahma bulls have you ridden?
Huh?
Yes, sir. I mean, really, seriously, it's a real question. How many Brahma bulls have you ridden? I've ridden 20. How many ostriches have you ridden? Zero? I've ridden 5. Because when you're a washed-up celebrity and they got a Kmart opening, they say, hey, will you sit in this tree and be Danny Partridge in a pear tree? And you need the money, and you do it. So when Gabe sends these letters, I can see absolutely everybody believing.
Well, you know, I was starting to think about it because I was contacted by the boxing people at Fox 2.
This
was some years ago, and they wanted me to fight the pro wrestler Chyna.
What?
The female Chyna.
Oh, this isn't the story I know about.
And I said, I don't want to. I said, I like boxing, and I'll box somebody who knows how to box, but right. I don't want to fight Chyna. I don't want to punch a woman. I'm not going to get in there and start socking a woman. And she's like, she's 180 pounds. And I'm like, I'm 200 pounds, and I still don't want to sock her. And Joey Buttafuoco ended up, like, headbutting her, you know, 2 months later.
One of us is a gentleman, and one of us is Buttafuoco.
I told him, yeah, so I don't want to punch a woman. If you find a guy who knows how to fight, then I'll gladly do it. But in the past,
I actually heard the end of that, so not to interrupt.
What is?
They found out about you and said he's going to kill somebody.
Oh, no.
That's what I heard. That you heard. He used to be a professional boxing coach. Yeah, and they found out about that and then wanted you out. That's what I had heard.
Well, that's flattering.
Interesting story about when Joey Buttafuoco eventually did. There was a Vegas line on the celebrity boxing match.
Right. Did you place bets?
I didn't, but you could.
You get color commentary.
But I do.
they had China.
Over Buttafuoco?
5-1 favorite over Buttafuoco. And it wasn't even close. It was was a street fighter, and he made a street fight out of it.
Well, it's that sort of thing where they go, China is a big woman. She's 5'10", she's 180 pounds. Joey Buttafuoco is 6'4", and he's 250 pounds. So she can be as big a woman as she wants. He still weighs 50 pounds more than she does. But, yes, it was ridiculous because not only did Joey Buttafuoco beat up a woman, he was fighting her like Max Bear used to fight. The ref would look the other way. He'd thumb her in the eye. Then he'd do the rabbit punch and the bolo punch. At a certain point, he literally threw her down onto the ground. Uh-huh. If it was a guy doing it to another guy, the crowd would have still booed. But it was a guy doing it to a woman, albeit who had a clitoromegalia, a woman.
It was the fighting back of the garage in Melville, Long Island.
I wanted to bring this up, which is, in the past, if you were a celebrity, and Gabe's been around long enough to know this, Gabe Kaplan in studio, Cotter's back, name of his book. In the past, when your gig ended and you were out of work, then you just got offers for other shows.
Right.
There was another sitcom. There was a movie. Maybe you didn't like the script. Maybe you didn't like the premise of the sitcom. But it was offers of work within the field you were in. Now, we're going to take 10 guys who haven't worked in a while, but whose names you recognize, and we're going to chain them together. And we're going to slowly lower them into a porta potty and see which one vomits first. And don't worry, you can make 50 grand, Gabe Kaplan. It's like, what? I thought I was just at this point, aren't you supposed to just turn down bad scripts? Like, aren't you supposed to go from good movies to bad movies or good sitcoms to crappy sitcoms or stars of starring roles wacky neighbors in sitcoms? Now they want us to ride bulls and have Joe Rogan yell, hang on, 10 more seconds.
You know how much they're paying if you won? That was 100 grand if you won that bull riding.
I think what differentiates Gabe Kaplan, and correct me if I'm wrong,
and me is that dignity?
You made quite a decent living investing. So you weren't desperate either for the money or for the fame.
Well, that's probably true. You know, I had a choice, and if I didn't have a choice, I would have done whatever. If I needed the money,
absolutely,
I would have done whatever I had to do to make a living. And I don't know if I would have done celebrity boxing because it's kind of ridiculous asking 60-year-old men to get in a ring and actually have a fight because someone could get injured. And I think you have to draw the line. I don't know what the limit on a celebrity boxing license is.
Minutes after you die. Yeah. At some point. At some point, some celebrity is going to get thrown off a bull or punched in the face by a wrestler, and something horrible is going to happen, and we're going to lose like the 8th Baldwin brother, and this whole thing will be shut down.
Crap. You lose one, maybe 2 Baldwins, nothing's going to happen.
If we lose Adam Rich, I can't go on.
The real comedy will be in when eventually and inevitably somebody dies in celebrity fat camp or celebrity wrestling. Somebody will die, and then there'll be all those pious newscasters. We have to take a good look at ourselves as a society now, and they'll play that music in the background, and we'll all get pious and weird for about 10 minutes, and then we'll get right back to it. Gabe Kaplan, world. It is a cool book because it's like a documentary. It's actual emails and correspondence.
It sounded like kind of sad, but now it sounds so funny.
Now it sounds cool.
So great
cool
idea.
Gabe, mazel tov to you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
As we've said before, Gabe's a doppelganger, Rob Zombie. I don't know why we need both of you the same morning. You are the same guy.
Redundant.
Rob Zombie in next.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show with Adam Carolla, Danny Bonaduce, and Teresa Strasser. In theaters next Friday, Halloween.
Tonight's brutal murders was described by police as Manson-like in its viciousness. 3 people brutally murdered and a 10-year-old boy being held in custody.
And now, Rob Zombie is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Good to see you again, Rob.
Good to see you.
Halloween, one of my all-time favorite scary movies. Believe it came out in 79, maybe it was 80.
I think it was 78.
I saw it. Maybe they did it in 78, because I swear I was in the 10th grade when I saw it. It was so scary. I saw it at the UA in North Hollywood, that a chick I had a crush on, Phyllis Tyler, farted.
Really?
What?
Because it was one of these things where you thought he was dead, and then he popped up from behind the sofa, and it was like, bun on. Phyllis was like, pfft. I was like, wow.
That's scary.
Scared the gas right out of Phyllis.
Oh, wow.
Made me hotter for her.
Did it?
Yeah. I'm sure you're a fan, Rob, of not only Phyllis, but the original.
Yeah.
The
more
original
so Phyllis
Halloween.
Now, I believe.
Yeah, the thing that was cool about the original is it was scary, but it was startling. They kept startling you. It's like, that's what made it scary. You'd be sitting there, and after you got startled four or five times, you were worried it was going to happen again.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and
nothing was like that back then. I mean, that movie's been so imitated since 1978, but at that point, what was like that? Nothing.
No,
it was so different.
Right. The thing with being startled and gore are entirely two different things. Gore that you know is coming, it can be, if you're into that kind of movie, is kind of fascinating. You're waiting, how's the gore going to come, like Hostel and things like that.
Yeah.
And Saw. That's really interesting. But the startling kind of fear makes you really jump. You know the old joke about you take a girl to a scary movie and she'll jump in your lap?
Mm-hmm.
Not the kind that's fascinating. The kind that where they
right.
Boom, they're out of the car and just like, oh my God, and there's a girl on your lap.
Yeah.
Phyllis usually.
Party.
She's cut right. one already, so you're good.
Scared the wind right out of her. So is the movie, what kind of remake is it? Is it reinterpretation or is it just a real remake?
No, it's... What I basically did was took the basic story of Michael Myers and then ran with it. Because if you remember back to the original, it's pretty basic.
Right.
It's this, you kind of hear we never see anything much about him. We just kind of hear about it. And then he randomly stalks three babysitters.
Right.
And it's a pretty basic premise.
And Rob, by the way, is turning out, whenever someone wants to do something else, because I've known Rob for quite some time, and I remember when Rob Zombie wanted to do some directing, and there's always that,
they're
going to want to be an astronaut.
Right.
They're
going to
let him, because he's Rob Zombie.
All right, knock yourself out. But
maybe he'll run for mayor.
Three or four pretty cool movies later, now it's Rob Zombie, the director. Rob, we spoke once about you designing the haunted house at Universal or something like that. Yeah. Do you still do that? Are you still into that?
Well, no. I mean, I did that for 2 years. It was, I think it was like 98, 99. Universal used to do this Halloween Horror Nights thing, and I designed a couple haunted mazes.
I went to it with my daughter, who's
your wife.
I just called. That's what I called outside my room, Isabella, to win the divorce wars. Because I called Isabella.
Because, a really good dad makes that phone call.
Mom didn't want you to come down and meet your hero, Rob Zombie, but I did, so I called her. I guess she didn't get you.
I'm curious, for somebody who specializes in scaring people, what's the most scared you've ever been watching a movie?
I don't think I've really been scared watching a movie since I saw Jaws.
Jaws was scary.
But I was also in, like, third grade. So
right.
The thing that makes Jaws scary to me... Like, The Exorcist was the scariest movie I ever saw, except 3 days later I wasn't scared anymore.
Yeah.
Jaws can still scare me. I can get in the ocean off Hawaii and all of a sudden hear my ear, dun-dun, and I went out of this water.
Oh, no, last night on the news, I had the sound off, so I don't know the specifics, but they were showing some shark attack, some girl, and I was like, see?
See?
Everyone laughs at me. It's going to happen.
Yeah, there's the thing I expect to hear from Rob Zombie a lot. Oh, everybody laughs at me.
Yeah.
Really?
They're
I don't think so,
laugh
Rob.
At you.
I would say...
People laugh at my shark paranoia.
For me, I thought... Halloween and Alien, the first one.
Yeah.
The first one scared the crap out of me because it was such a slow burn. Nothing really happened for the first half of the movie.
And not that much happened in the second. You almost never saw that monster.
Yeah. It sucked you in, and like any good movie, always best to have one Mike Myers, not a bunch. You see, later on, Aliens screwed up because they became aliens.
Yeah.
And then we couldn't hate the one anymore. There was a whole group of them, and it's hard for me to focus on them. Mike Myers, there's just one Mike Myers in this one,
just
right?
Yeah, the one Mike.
So is this sort of a prequel?
Well, what it is, if you remember in the original, it starts with him as a little kid for like 2 seconds.
Right.
Kills his sister. Then we jump ahead, and the doctor comes to town. He starts talking
about Donald Pleasance.
Donald Pleasance, right. So I start when he's 10. For the first act of the movie is him as a 10-year-old leading up to the night he kills everybody.
Uh-huh.
Then the second act of the movie is him as a child being incarcerated, growing, you know, into an adult, mm-hmm. locked behind
the monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Act 3 is when he goes to Haddonfield, and that has the John Carpenter moments, but it's still totally different. Mm-hmm. The motivation and the reason for everything.
It's called Halloween. It's not Halloween part whatever or no, it's, Halloween it's revisited.
I wanted to start over because I thought after the last one, there was nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. At least nowhere I wanted to go. So
you
I
didn't
had
like the last one?
Not so much.
Well, he didn't direct
but
it.
You figure when there's a part, when there's an eight after the
yeah.
title.
Yeah.
Right.
Unless it's enough.
Part eight of anything.
Right.
Yes.
Unless it's like a porn series.
Yeah, and now it has a...
It's, Eagle 357. I've seen that one.
Yeah, that one, they usually get better.
It's out on August 31st, which is counterintuitive because we assumed it'd be out on Halloween.
Right.
Why put it out now? Why not wait till Halloween?
Well, here's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the Santa Claus 3.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a great thing, idea on how, I mean, on, to see on Christmas, but on December 26th, any interest?
Mm. I see. You have that sweet month before.
Well, yeah, Halloween's only one day, so if the whole world goes to see it on Halloween, that's great, but come November 1st and everybody's, like, behind on their Christmas shopping, nobody cares about a movie called Halloween.
Good point.
And there's not much in the scare department that's out there these days. I think what ended up happening, you correct me if I'm wrong, Rob Zombie in studio. You never had a problem in the past doing that. I don't know where to start now. It seems like these hostile movies and the Saw movies, which were all the rage a couple of years ago, are dying on the vine a little bit. It seems like people want the old school thriller stuff more than the just grind 'em gore stuff. Is there a trend shift here? Because I know Hostel 2 didn't do very well. Didn't seem like that many people got enthusiastic about it.
Well, I mean, everything can't stay popular forever. I mean, it's like that, you know, I mean, what is Saw 4 is coming out. So, you know, by the time you get to the fourth movie in a series, I mean, the popularity declines. Doesn't matter what it is. You know,
but what about the genre? What about, I mean, is this movie, would this movie, Halloween, the Rob Zombie version of it, be more of the gore sort of hostile or more the suspense?
More like the suspense. And the reason I liked Halloween was, you know, Michael Myers is kind of like an iconic monster, mm-hmm. like Frankenstein.
Right.
And that's what's at the center of it. These other movies are more, you know, they're different. This isn't really anything to do with that.
I just think the guys who originally sat down to ink the script for Halloween 1 had to be pretty confident in their product to name the killer Mike Myers. Like, how about we call him Skullatron?
Right.
How about we call him Mike? Okay.
Mike
Venom? No.
No.
Mike Devlin?
No.
Mike Slasherman.
No, he's
Mike Myers.
Yeah. Mike Myers? A nice Jewish boy?
I went to high school with a kid named Mike Myers, the sweetest guy in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like, how confident you have to be? And the other guy's name is Jason, and the other one.
Jason is not a scary name.
I know. That's my point. What are we doing?
It's like a nerd name.
But I think it's
or
like
Freddy.
I think it's the Smuckers thing. Yes. The biggest, the three greatest killers in movie serial killer time is named Freddy,
Michael.
And Jason, I think it's
What's
saying
that?
To the
and
world.
Norman.
And Norman. That's right, from the Bates Motel.
Nerd
Norman. Freddy. Like, if somebody said, hey, there's a guy in another room. Actually, there are four guys. One's name is Norman. The other's name is Jason. The other name is Michael. And the other name is Freddy. I'd be like, please.
Bring it on.
Okay, how about if there's four guys in the other room? One's named Michael, one's named Freddy, one's named Jason, and one's named Zombie.
That's my point.
You know?
That'd be one of those things, too, where I'd go, and there's a fifth guy named Rob, and I'd go, so what? And they'd go, zombies. It's the last thing. We go, oh.
Now, do you think it is your success, your money, or obvious talent? A lot of people don't get the chances you get when you're Rob Zombie, one-trick pony to some short-sighted people.
Of course.
Okay? How did you get that break to be taken so seriously? Like, I happen to very like much like Marilyn Manson. I think he's a talented cat. And I also wondered the same thing about him. How did he get a publisher to take his book seriously? How did you get Rob Zombie to be taken very seriously?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, you just have to keep doing it. I mean, because at first everybody says, oh, I want to direct. And it always, you kind of roll your eyes and go, yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think when I hear other people say that, I roll my eyes because I go, you have no idea how much work it is.
I don't want to do it, and that's why. I really don't.
But it started with music videos. You know, I directed all my music videos. I direct music videos for other people for about 15 years. So that kind of led to, you know, movies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I think once somebody hires you and they go, okay, we need a music video, here's $400,000 and we need it by Tuesday, and you start delivering the goods, they go, okay, he's serious.
That guy's the deal, okay.
That's, you know, I mean, well, once people meet me and work with me, they say,
on time, on your budget, well, says
also,
the guy.
Also, basically, what was the budget on a House of 1,000 Corpses?
The budget on that, I think, was $11 million.
And the Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects was cheaper. That was $7 million, and Halloween is $15 million. Yeah.
So, and is that enough? I mean, could you do a scarier movie with $20 million?
I don't know if you could do it scary. What, you know, money gives you time. Time is right. Money. And what's good with having more time, although it's always a sliding scale, because if it's a $100 million budget, that you know people go, God, if I only had $120 million,
right.
What I could do. But what would be great if you planned for a $15 million movie and then someone goes, hey, we found another million. You go, ah, oh, that's what I needed.
Right.
Because you just always feel like you need a couple more days.
Right.
Because, you know, you schedule everything in advance, every little scene, every little actor, every move you do. But sometimes you kind of feel like you didn't finish. Like, you know, the problems I had was shooting in South Pasadena where they shot the original at night. You know, at 11 o'clock, whatever, the cops come and they just shut you down.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're...
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you got the scene or you're finished. They'll step in front of the cameras and go, you're done.
Yeah, you have a schedule. You have to move on. Yeah. And at a certain point, you go, well, that wasn't a 10. It was a 7. But we have a budget, and we got to pack it up and move it on.
In this case, you have laws. I'm doing a reality show right now in a residential neighborhood. At 10 o'clock, we have to go home or we get fined like crazy, whether we're done or not.
Tail lights up and get out.
Rob Zombie, Halloween is the name of the movie directed by Rob. It is out in theaters August 31st. Keep up the good work, Rob, and we'll go out and see this one because, like I said, the first one for sure in my top three of all-time scary movies.
Thank you. You're one of the very few things, you know, when girls hit a certain age, you have a problem with their father. You are one of the very few things my daughter and I agree on.
There you go.
Thanks, man.
I'm glad I could be of service.
You are. I'm not kidding. You are.
We'll take ourselves a quick break. My buddy Ray is out here. He has more tales from my past, and we'll get into one of our reenactments next.
And crapped in Kimmel's desk when it comes to feces. Adam's Power is the best. Loves poop, flings poop. Loves poop, flings poop. Through his duke on Adam. Yeah, raise a name. Yeah, raise a name. Yes, raise a name.
Ray. Ray.
One of my favorite people. Grows on me every day, man.
Ray does most everything barefoot. Now he does construction barefoot. Back in the day, he used to ride on the back of motorcycles barefoot.
Basketball barefoot?
I would pick up Ray at midnight. On Ray and I was sort of like catfish. We just swam around eating whatever crap was at the bottom of the lake. We're bottom feeders. We never had any money. There was never enough food wherever we were to satiate us. And we would befriend kids that had parents that had refrigerators that had food in them. And then we would go to their house and we would raid the refrigerator.
Sure.
I don't know why we ate twice as much. Oh, yeah. We found out there was porn and food at our buddy Donnie's house, and we
moved in.
It was on like Donkey Kong. It was the first guy we knew that had a VCR.
Yeah.
The size of a dinosaur, right?
Yeah, it was VCR. One of these things where when you hit the pop-up button, if you had a urn sitting on top of it, it would go sailing 20 feet in the air.
You could sit on it like a ride.
It was like a top loader, and you hit this thing. It was like James Bond's ejector seat. It was like, I don't know why it had to. I don't know why they had to have springs with 5,000 foot pounds of torque on them to put the 8-ounce cassette up. But yes, those top loaders.
They didn't know any better back then.
Well,
and it was about $4,000.
Do you never forget that very first porn you see?
Does
it stick in your mind?
What was it, Ray? Weekend Roulette?
It's not, no. What's the one your favorite?
You know the theme song?
Sex
and
Boat?
Everything?
Oh, it was Taboo too.
Come on, please.
What happened in that?
He's got it all. Yes,
I can't
mine is not dirty
at all. Doesn't have a dirty word in the title, but Jack has made such a clear, specific rule about no reference to this that I'm afraid to tell you. But it was just about the color of a girl's eyes or eye.
All right. We had to watch one of those. Remember that?
This, my buddy Don had a VCR.
Taboo 2.
He had Taboo 2, and he had a fridge filled with Chinese food that if we timed it right, we could get there. There was a very small window.
Or deli.
The window or deli food. The window was after his dad said he wouldn't eat it anymore and before it actually went bad.
Ooh.
See, if we got into the Chinese food the next day after his dad brought it home, his dad would be pissed because he wanted to eat that Chinese food. And if we got into it 9 days after his dad brought it back, it would be bad. If you got to about 3.5 days, his dad had too much dignity to eat it, but we were raccoons and we had iron stomachs, so we'd go up there and eat it. But I would pick up Ray.
And we'd also pick the mold off occasionally and eat it anyway.
We're cool. Yeah. I would pick up Ray on my motorcycle. I had a Honda 404. It was barely enough power to get me up Laurel Canyon. Now 210-pound Ray climbs on the back. But Ray would climb onto the back, and I would pick him up at midnight because we were just like 19. We had nowhere to be. We were out of work.
Those were prime feeding hours.
Cleaning carpets, and we're prime feeding hours. We were hungry. We didn't have any money.
Oh, so Dupar's at the end of Laurel Canyon, where I used to live, was out for you guys.
That would have been perfect had we not been thrown out for Ray urinating on someone's leg underneath the table in one of the booths.
Dupar's?
Yeah. Well, what happened was... Ray was banned.
Who
hasn't?
He was banned. Ray was banned.
Well, you pee inside.
Ray, yeah.
That's true.
Come on, princess.
Not at the table.
Hey, man, when you can look at me in the eye and say you've never urinated on a friend underneath a, banquette in
you
a
ain't
diner.
My friend.
I can't say it.
Sorry for being Miss Fancy.
Also,
pants.
Air sickness bag when they wouldn't let me up off the, because we're on a tarmac, you can't get up and use the bathroom.
There you go.
Air sickness bag, which are, by the way, not watertight, lying bastards.
It's not like Ray had to go, which is he summoned it. It was something that used to happen quite a bit. We'd be at a diner. We'd be 5-6 of us stuffed into a booth. I don't know if you know this about urine, but urine is almost by definition the same temperature as your body.
Right.
You don't feel it. And when you're wearing thick jeans, you don't feel it until the guy's done. So you were literally sitting there with your thick tennis socks, your sneakers, and your 501 jeans, and Ray has just relieved himself on your right leg, and you don't know it until Ray starts laughing, and he's done. And what happened at Dupar's is Ray had done this, and the guy he did it to was probably Snake, a.k.a. Todd Euler. Todd picked up a glass of water.
Oh, that's right.
And he threw it at Ray, and that glass of water got on me, and I picked my glass up and threw it at Todd. And then Todd picked an ashtray up, and he chucked an ashtray.
And like Todd, being a Jew that he is, missed.
No aim, and the ashtray, I don't know why ashtrays needed to be 3 inches of solid glass, but they're essentially more dangerous than any Japanese throwing star that ever came out of a dojo. He chucked this ashtray, and of course, it just went sailing across Dupar's.
No, it ricocheted on the floor and then up and almost hit a woman.
Right.
Nice.
We were all then banned from Dupar's. At that point, so we could no longer go to Dupar's, but we didn't have any money for Dupar's
either.
We're
allowed in now, though.
We were banned from like Tiny Nailers and Dupar's and all the places that had
420?
Booths.
420?
Yeah.
No, 420 we got credit. Where else? We were banned from Jerry's Deli.
Yeah. Yeah, because when guys come in and urinate on each other's shoes in your booth, it's real easy to...
They take pictures of you.
Tell them they can't come back. But Ray used to get on the back of my motorcycle at 12 midnight in the middle of winter. And he would be barefoot. He didn't think it was a good idea, even though it was January, even though it was 37 degrees outside and we're heading up Laurel Canyon into the hills where it drops down 10 degrees.
It's comfortable.
It would be a great idea to put shoes on. So we get on the back of my bike, and I would not have enough gas to get me and Ray up the hill, so we'd have to pool our change. But with a motorcycle, 18 or 20 cents when gas is a buck a gallon. That's enough to get you up to Donnie's house to watch some Taboo 2.
You're going to the beach on
and
that.
And eat some Mushu pork. Now, it was a funny thing once where Ray was on the back of someone else's motorcycle, our buddy Chris, again barefoot,
right,
probably shirtless as well, and decided it'd be a nice time to light up a cigarette.
Ah.
So as Ray took his hands off of Chris's shoulders, got out a cigarette and started reaching for his lighter, Chris decided he should accelerate, which then sent Ray flying off the back of the motorcycle, shoeless and shirtless. With
didn't drop the cigarette, though.
Didn't drop the cigarette, but...
like the Mary Decker of smoking.
And then he was mad at Chris. No helmet, no shoes. I don't even think that's a law people have thought of. You need to wear shoes when you're on a motorcycle.
Right.
If
you get pulled over like that, they can't give you a ticket.
You need to breathe
on your
motorcycle.
Just say move along.
Ray,
did you get in a fight without putting out your cigarette, without putting your cigarette down, Ray?
No, that's never happened.
Really?
I just threw stuff at people.
I just have a picture of a guy talking stuff to you going, all right.
No, but I did put my cigarette out on a guy's head once. I did that.
Did it scar?
That's what I'm going to do to you after the fight, too.
Actually, I might have another angle for you on that. I might have something good for you on that. That Opie and Anthony team, on tape, I challenge them to a fight for 5 G's of my own money. There's two of them.
You're going to have to pony up more than that.
No, we get their money if we win, dude. Mm-hmm. We'll kill them.
Oh, wait
DJs.
A second. I think I get this.
I'll fight Opie. He fights Anthony.
Right.
We'll kill him.
All right.
Disc jockey.
Okay. Hold on a second. This is sounding like radio. You know I don't like that.
Pretty soon there's going to be a sticker stop.
Yes, and then where are we going to be?
And it's kick Budgie in the nuts.
Yeah, we'll have great ratings, and then where are we going to be? Ray.
Yeah.
Quickly, because we're starting to run late now. Motoring FM. You know, I complain a lot about graffiti and taggers and people writing on freeway signs. Ray and I and a few other guys...
This was creative, though. This was beyond that.
There used to be a sign. It was from Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh, yeah.
Was it not?
Yeah, and it looked like your...
It looked like a freeway sign. Yeah, and it was a billboard.
Right.
And it said, things to do this summer, or something like
in
that.
In California.
And it said, like, go to Knott's Berry Farm.
Number one.
Go to the... park, and then the third one was like, go to the beach. Somebody, I don't know who, I don't even know if we can say this on the air. I think we can say this on the air.
Why not?
Well, Ray, what am I asking you for?
I'd say.
Now listen, dump guy Rhino, this isn't too bad. I'm just not sure if you're allowed to say it this way, but, we got bleeped out. Let's see. Well, you know, there's a, there's a song by the Go-Go's called Cool Jerk.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Some years ago, if you take the title of that song.
And there's
the
David
radio.
Hasselhoff.
Right, right. It's another word for masturbate.
To the beach and abuse yourself.
We thought it would be funny if the sign said that. I don't know why. I don't know how bored you can be. We must have been 18 or 19. But we didn't go up there with a spray can. No,
we made stencils.
We made stencils.
We got white contact paper.
We took the font that they actually used on the sign, and we made the same size, and we replicated it in white contact paper because it was written in, like, Helvetic on the sign in 8 or 10-inch lettering, and that's what we replicated.
We were also up there for an hour and a half getting everything straight. That'll look good.
We were on... This sign, by the way, was on Ventura Boulevard. In the middle of Studio City. It's not like 1,000 cops didn't drive past it every 10 minutes. And it was 3 a.m. When did we decide it would be a good time to climb on the back of this store and climb up the ladder and get onto the roof and then climb up the sign, which had floodlights on it, and then stand there on the sign hanging over Ventura Boulevard arguing about the lettering not being right. The placement of the sign.
Screaming at each other.
No. Here's how you know we didn't have cable or video games. This was not on a bet. This was a freebie. This cost us money.
I do it now.
We had to make the letters. somebody had to head down to the art supply place and drop $10 on this, you know.
That was Alex.
Adhesive back lettering. Was he with us?
Yeah, Alex. And, you know, well, we did this with the with all the Jewish kids. Jack.
Really?
Alex, yeah.
Wow, did we ruin them? Jesus Christ.
We did this with all the IHP kids.
That was like, that was like the real bar mitzvah. We'll make you a man. Come out and commit crime with us.
Right on.
You're going to college. We're going into carpet cleaning. But before we go our separate ways, you're going to Berkeley. We're going to Van Nuys
College.
But before we part ways, let's seal our bond with just destruction of some public property. So yes, we went up there and wrote, and I have a picture of it. Do you have a picture of it, Ray?
It's either you or me. I don't know who has it. But we should get that. We should blow that up.
I didn't know you were going to tell that story or tell me to tell that story. But I'm going to get a picture. I'll put it on the website. Yeah?
All right.
That's
I'll look for it tonight.
That's good times. I'll have to bring it in. I'll have to bring it in tomorrow. But you can look for yours, too, because we actually said no one's going to believe us. And, well, I remember turning to Ray in the parking lot and the alley at 3 a.m. when we were 18 and a half over there in Studio City. And I said, you know, Ray, 25 years from now when I'm doing syndicated radio,
yeah,
and you haven't been killed by a family member, we're going to tell this story and people are going to want proof. They're not going to believe us. So let's take a picture and have it last a lifetime. All right, Ray, good times there, Prada.
Thank you, brother.
Quickly, Mark the Poet.
Good morning, Adam.
Mark the Poet is a friend of the show. He's out in Los Angeles. He's got a show at the Aurora tonight, yes?
Yeah, Aura Nightclub.
Ah, the Aura, sorry. The Aura Nightclub. Where is that?
It's in Studio City. 12215 Ventura Boulevard.
Ah, is there a Knot sign above it that we could desecrate?
Yeah, there might be. I believe there is.
So you're in Studio City at the Aura Club on Ventura Boulevard tonight.
I am.
All right, and you'll be doing some poetry?
Oh, yes, with some hip-hop beats and a fine gentleman by the name of Mount Sinai.
Mm-hmm. Israel.
Huh. Mount Sinai. Still don't sound like hip-hop.
Definitely not a Jew.
All right, and...
good morning, Bonaducci, by the way, and Teresa.
Good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you for finding my new MySpace and rejoining me. I appreciate it. I missed you.
Are you going to be this dynamic tonight at Aurora?
He's saving it.
Even more so.
I can't.
I'm actually
mathematically impossible. Mm-hmm.
I have the energy because I'm actually two blocks away from Bonaducci's old house.
Mm. Which one?
In Los Feliz?
Yeah, going up, knock on the door, say hi to the wife, tell her you're the poet.
All right, I'll do that.
Were you sleeping at Griffith Park?
No, my bro, Henry Thomas, the actor's house.
Ah, the great Henry Thomas who we've never heard of?
You mean from E.T.? Yeah.
That Henry Thomas?
You mean my next-door neighbor?
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know how I say next-door neighbor if I mean I can see their house? He's really my next-door neighbor.
Oh, really? Yeah. Dangerously close to the Ducci residence. Yes.
Was.
All right, Mark, tonight... You in Studio City with Mount Sinai doing the rap, doing the poetry on Ventura Boulevard at the Aura Club.
Word.
Dude, I may go. What the hell?
Next,
he goes out of his way to write to us and stuff.
Yeah,
I may go.
And in a chilling twist, he made love to the corpse.
Yes. Good times. All right, Ray. Good times. T?
Yes.
The news. What's coming up in it?
Oh, well, this just in. Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie, and now Bill Murray. They're all in the same kind of trouble.
Riding. Oh,
Bill Murray. He's gotten himself in a little trouble over in Stockholm.
Got a shot of him coming out of a cab, not wearing underpants, with the sack shaven.
Oh.
I knew it.
It's not shaven.
Murray, if you're listening, I told you this was going to happen if he didn't start rocking the BVDs. Take a quick break. Be back after this.
Of liking little girls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was arrested earlier this month by UCLA police.
Hypothetical.
Yes.
What do you think America is more disgusted about? This admitted pedophile with the website devoted to little girls, or Hasselhoff singing on America's Got Talent?
Well, they're both travesties and hurtful. But I'm going to say we're more upset about the pedophile.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Really?
Can kids watch Hasselhoff sing?
Yeah, because there could be damage done.
Damaging.
Yeah.
Kids do watch America's Got Talent.
Much rather this guy take my kid camping.
Really?
Not for a long weekend.
Just a 3-day.
Just a two-day. Two-day weekend. Yeah, then be exposed to Hasselhoff singing Get Out of My Car.
Well, this guy, was on the campus of UCLA, and that violated the terms of a restraining order to keep away from children because there was some kind of child care facility on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has been released.
Yeah, to be fair to the guy, I don't know what he was doing at UCLA, but how you, you know, when someone tells you have to stay 100 feet away from, I don't know that I could stay 100 feet away because I drive past schools, and I don't know technically if you could do it. If you wanted to bust somebody at any given time, you could find a kid who was within 100 feet of you.
It's a very fair question. I'll tell you a semi-answer to it. When I was on probation, I could not go within 500 feet of another person on probation. And I said, how the hell will I know? And they said, it's just a technicality. If you get on a 747.
Yeah.
You can be pretty sure there are 10 people on probation on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
So they're aware you can't avoid it. They're looking for you going out of your way to do it. If it's an accident, they'll let you slide.
Right.
And not often will the cops let you slide. They'll let you slide on that.
And if you got busted because you're on probation because you beat up a pedophile, they'll let you slide. But if you're a self-admitted pedophile, they're not going to cut you a lot of slack.
Yeah,
that's
now,
what happened with
mind
this guy.
You, he's never been convicted again. But what the Los Angeles City's attorney's office is saying is that the restraining order he was allegedly arrested for violating was procedurally defective.
Right.
Not clear exactly what that means. But
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the person who has to refile it, it runs out, and somebody just failed to refile it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a procedural defect.
My lawyer, Adam Sachs, got on a technicality. Somebody's lawyer, I won't say whose, forgot to file something on time, and he was all over that, and boom, that changes everything.
Right,
one little
that's
mistake.
True. Well, he was supposed to stay 10 yards away of any child for 3 years, so we'll see what happens with that. But he did not enjoy his experience being incarcerated, and he spoke to CBS 2 News.
Wouldn't let me have any access to a phone. So, I mean, I was, like, locked in this thing with all these guys yelling death threats at me for days and stuff, and, you know.
Were you in isolation?
Yeah, I was in a segregation unit. But, I mean, I've never been in one of these things before. I mean, they can press a button, the door opens. They can press a button, the door closes. See, look at this. I feel like, what the hell am I going to do? I mean, I got these, everyone's after me here. I don't think I'm going to get out of this neighborhood alive.
Yeah. The guy, obviously, well, there's a couple things. A, I'm sure if you scratched around in his past, you'd realize he was probably victimized at some point. Probably. I don't know 100%, but if I was a betting man, I'd say some uncle got to him and did a little diddling and fiddling with him at some point. So on one hand, this guy was probably a victim at some point. And on the other hand, he has a mental disorder.
Yeah.
Right.
He is, when you hear him interviewed and when you see his... when you see the way his posture is and the way his hair is and so on and so forth, you realize this guy is handicapped mentally.
Yeah, he's disturbed.
Yeah, thus the thinking it was a good idea to make the proclamation about having the website dedicated to Young Tail.
Right.
A little different than Lycus's homepage. This is about 4 years
slightly
younger, I think. The point...
Dump that kindergartner. If she wants candy money, dump her.
The point is this guy is mentally defective, probably needs medication, needs to be supervised, and needs to be put somewhere. We don't have the funds for that, so he'll just live in his car, and then eventually he'll do something horribly to somebody, do something horrible to somebody's kid, and we'll all say we saw it coming. We just didn't know what to do with it.
Be nice if there were a halfway house or someplace where he would be safe from himself and children would be safe from him.
Maybe he could crash with Mark the Poet and the guy from E.T.
Henry Thomas's house.
Yeah.
Guest room.
Just yell out the window and Gretchen would go, what?
Okay, let's talk about Bill Murray.
Yeah,
star of Rushmore and Caddyshack. Rushmore, yeah. One of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
Don't laugh at me, Bald Brian. Yeah. Sorry I didn't mention Caddyshack first, you nerd. Meatballs and Stripes, I'm there.
It's great. Was he nominated for Lost in Translation?
Yes, I believe so.
Really? I watched him sleep for 96 minutes and he gets nominated for that?
It was
literally like somebody put a security camera in Bill Murray's goddamn bedroom and I watched him sleep for 2 hours. That's what that movie was.
It was very subtle. Not like... Yes.
What like happened? Subtle where your eyes are closed. Please, baby, what about Meatballs 3? When are you going to get to work on that, Billy?
Well... Billy's busy. He was at a golf tournament in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to get in his golf cart and cruise through downtown at a slow pace.
Golf tournament in Stockholm sounds like some sort of gay code. You know what I mean?
What does it really mean?
Where's Tex? He's in the middle of a golf tournament in Stockholm.
Let's
wow.
Just say sure. He's on the back nine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Woo, you tell him to shower before we talk again.
He's having an Arnold Palmer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he could face drunk driving charges in Sweden because of this incident, which was on Monday. Police are just telling us about it now. The 56-year-old actor, comedian, again, was in a slow-moving
movie. Called Lost in Translation, where he seemed to be passed out.
The golf cart.
Is this what they're talking about? He should have got a DUI for that movie. And all you cool people thought it was so cool because it wasn't about anything and he didn't really say anything.
According to the official police report, the golf cart was moving more slowly than...
I hate all you.
Lost in Translation.
The golf cart, what, huh?
Was moving more slowly than Lost in Translation.
Ah, sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
So he gets, he gets a DUI in Stockholm.
Well, he smelled of alcohol, according to the police, and they pulled him over, and he refused to blow into the breathalyzer, citing American law.
Well, the breathalyzer's a little different over there. When they say, blow into these, you don't really want to do it.
What do you think the limit is? You think it's .08 over there? I feel like it would be higher.
No,
it's like 11.6.
Right. Okay.
Well, what they did was... They took a blood test, so it'll be 14 days before the results are in.
Mm-hmm.
He signed a document admitting that he was driving under the influence and agreed to let a police officer plead guilty for him if the case goes to court.
Look, everybody who leaves a golf course is drunk.
Of course. Anybody who goes to a golf course is drunk.
You just spent 4 hours not working, standing around in the middle of the day, on the middle of a Saturday, with three other dudes and another black guy dragging your clubs around. And there's a chick who drives around in a golf cart that has a mini keg and swizzle sticks in it. And she just drives around to you. The beer comes to you. The only reason to golf is to get loaded. And by the time you get to hour number 3.5 out in the sun, you're S-faced. I'm surprised that 18th hole isn't filled with vomit. Or urine every time.
Right.
Do you know how much urinating goes on the golf course?
A lot?
In a designated area?
You get a ball in some of those holes, and it actually doesn't go in. It just falls
it just
on the top.
It just floats to the top. Yeah.
Well, a quick correction here. It turns out the blood alcohol level that is legal in Sweden is quite low. So perhaps he wasn't that loaded. He was taking a golf cart to a club.
All right.
So that seems like a good idea. It's likely that you're...
I personally feel the word punk-ass bitch needs to be mentioned here about the Stockholm Police Department.
Oh, for
a
pulling him over?
Going 4 miles an hour with a little bit of a buzzed Bill Murray?
The whole thing about drunk driving is not about you putting you in danger, but it's about putting others in danger.
Exactly.
How much damage are you going to do?
I ride my motorcycle drunk all the time.
Right. You hit a school bus with a golf cart, what's it going to do?
Right.
You think you ran over an acorn.
Yeah, I'll scar the kids up a little bit by the fact that they've seen my splatter hit the window, but I won't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, remember Matt Murphy? He's the guy that caught Barry Bonds' record-breaking 756 home run ball.
Mm-hmm. Wearing a Mets jersey?
Well, wearing a Mets jersey.
Yeah.
But he was going on and on. He was going to keep the ball. It was sentimental. It was an important piece of sports history.
Sure.
Here's how he sounds now.
I wanted to keep it. You know, it's such an important part of baseball history that I wanted to keep it. But I'm young. I don't have the bank account to afford the financial incurrences that come with keeping this major part of history.
I guess what he's talking about is incurring tax debt. Because if you have an asset, you then will have to pay tax.
Oh, I thought of that. I thought of security.
I heard this story, and you can play my CNN one on the same topic, if you will, Bald Brian.
Well, number 756 is for sale. The New Yorker who caught Barry Bonds' record-breaking home run ball says that he has no choice but to sell it since he could be taxed for just having it. Sotheby's says it will hold an online auction between August 28th and September 15th, and experts said that it could go for $500,000.
How evil's the man? They're going to tax you for this ball, and you haven't even sold it yet. And then how do they put a price on it accurately?
That's difficult.
You really have no idea. I guess they have an expert estimate, and then that's what you have to pay taxes on. But then what if the thing sells for $300,000 less?
No.
Do you think the government gives you a rebate?
You go to Antiques Roadshow, and some mo with an English accent tells you what the ball's worth.
Ah.
I don't like
interesting.
That. Mo.
English accents?
Now, I mean, that could be a lot of money. If it's worth $500,000, let's say, well, this kid's probably not in a 50% tax bracket, but let's say he's in a, 25% tax bracket, he's going to have to pay $125,000.
I don't even know how big a difference that makes.
It's
just if you get if you get $1 million, you get taxed at 40% or something like that. It's a lot closer to 40% than
right.
it is.
You're right.
And that's
that
a 25%.
Yeah.
If you win $1 million for winning
right?
a game show, you're going to walk with $600,000.
Your taxes if you make $1 million a day.
Right.
Right. Interesting.
Hey, T-Bone?
Yep.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's take ourselves a break.
Why not?
Let's break this news into two delightful pieces.
Yeah.
To share with the audience's ears. You know what it's like?
What?
You know the Q-tip swab?
Yeah.
It has the furry side
yeah.
and you use it up on one ear.
Right.
And then you're going to flip it over, smell it, then flip it over.
Yeah.
Oh, no one else does that?
Yeah, of course, then, everyone but
T
does that.
Okay, and then we're going to do it with the other ear?
Yeah.
And then you draw a smiley face and wax on the mirror in the bathroom?
Yes. Yeah. Do it on a T-shirt, yes. And then you tie-dye it, and when you pull it out, you have an earwax smiley face.
Make candles?
It's called decoupage. Or no, it's called, I don't know what the hell is it called. Anyway, point is this will be that Q-tip.
Okay.
We will get to the other side of it. The other cleaning of the ear next. What are we going to come back to, though, Tim?
Well, men and women don't find the same things funny, obviously, but I can tell you exactly why.
You don't like earwax jokes?
That's why it's called an earwax, because we make candles from it.
That's right. Men and women finding things different, and what was that?
And I'm going to tell you what to wear that's going to make you more attractive to women, based
on
a study.
We'll do that next on the Adam Carolla Show.
This is Sarah Silverman. I love Adam. I love Adam Carolla. I'm glad you're listening to him. You're doing the right thing.
I love that girl. All right, baby girl.
Yeah.
We got the other half of the news to go, and then I think we'll do some home improvement for the last segment. So, rest of the news.
All right. I'll make it quick. Now, we're talking about the difference between men and women and what we find funny.
Mm-hmm.
This was studied by a professor at the University of Connecticut. She's actually spent her entire career studying men and women and humor.
Mm-hmm.
And according to this professor, there are three major differences in what men and women find funny.
Mm.
Number one.
Pollock jokes.
Close.
Never hear a woman tell a Pollock joke.
Women don't like crude humor. Crude humor, that's Three Stooges type of humor with eye poking and head slamming, the sort of humor you might find in Jackass.
Mm-hmm.
She found women don't enjoy crude humor as a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Women don't tell jokes, they tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
Women's humor takes longer to develop, it's not just set up punchline.
Right.
And number three, women don't like humor making fun of each other's physical shortcomings. Groups of women don't sit around making fun of each other's looks the way men do.
You can be funny without making fun of someone else.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could call Carolla, who is in fine shape, fat, and he wouldn't say a thing. You're skinny, and it would never occur to me in a million years to look and go, hey, you're fat, because I know you would be reduced, and any other girl, skinny or not, reduced to tears.
Mm. Yeah.
I do notice there's more sitting around amongst guys and just going, hey, pie face, stuff like that.
No,
we wouldn't do that.
We go after the size of your wiener. You know, we're mean to each other because we don't care. Girls care.
Here's what we do. Here's what we do when we meet a new guy and he's going to be indoctrinated into our group.
Right.
We search real hard. We're like the Terminator with that scanner thing in our eye. So it's like, Brillo head, no Brillo head, hook nose, no, yeah. No, double chin, no, let's go down, fat ass, no, bald, no baldy, nothing going on, no, weird ethnicity, we can make fun, and if at the end of scanning a guy and not being able to find something about him being bald or ethnicity or having a hook nose or fat or whatever, When it all just, you know what comes up on the computer? Then douchebag.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so when you get called douchebag, it's a great compliment. Because it means we wanted to call you baldy or fatty or hook nose. We don't have anything. We've settled on douchebag. We have to call you something horrible. That's all we have.
And I get a special compliment. Because I often get bought a douchebag.
Right.
I get that all the time.
It's a nice compliment.
Bought a douchebag.
Now, it's not a compliment when they use douchebag to supersize whatever it is you got. Like, if you're talking about Brian and someone goes, hey, did you talk to Brian? I'm like, please, that bald douchebag.
Now I
use douchebag to put a couple of zeros behind my bald.
Right.
I've taken my 7 and made it into a 700. But if they just go that douchebag, that means there's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
But if he looked at me and said douchebag, we're still talking pals. We're going to go out drinking later.
Right.
But if he goes, Bonaducci, that short douchebag. He knows that's right. It. I'm offended, and he's trying to be mean to me.
This professor surveyed men and women to find out their favorite movies to see what she could learn from that. And men's top 5 comedies, the aforementioned Caddyshack, douchebag Bald Brian. Was that right?
No,
I can't even do it.
Bald douchebag.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Feels horrible. I'm sorry. You're very handsome.
You want me to set you up?
You're very handsome.
I'll try it again.
Yeah.
Hey, I was talking to Brian yesterday. He said hi.
What? Bald douchebag?
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
There you go.
Thanks.
Can we move forward?
And,
well, you still sounded awful sweet.
Men like Blazing
Can we move forward?
Men like Blazing Saddles.
Especially with the fart sound, sure.
Hey, where are the white women at?
One of your favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Office Space. Now, I'm a fan of that movie. Office Space.
I haven't really seen it.
Of course you are. You have a sentimental female douchebag.
Trading Places and Meet the Parents. Round out the top 5 for men. But what do what do women find funny?
First of all, I agree with almost none of those except Caddyshack was funny.
Well, maybe you like the women.
Was funny. Yeah.
Come on.
Trading Places.
Trading Places, yeah. Anyway.
Well, Leonard Murphy in his prime.
Qualifications. Rape, murder, awesome, and rape. You said rape twice.
I like rape.
Blazing Saddles.
I think it's pretty darn funny.
All right, so what
Women's
do you have?
Top 5. When Harry Met Sally.
Nine
to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Annie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And Tootsie.
But Annie Hall would have taken my number 1 over Boys or Girls. Annie Hall is the funniest. In my opinion, out of all those movies, Annie Hall was the funniest. So I'm a chick and a douchebag.
Mm-hmm. And Lost in Translation.
Didn't make the top 5 for either gender. But pretentious douchebags rated number 1.
But amongst somnambulants.
Yeah. If you rated it against, say, like Xanax.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it kills.
All right. It's somnolent, you say.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what should you wear if you're going out tonight and you want to be attractive to women? Well, Men's Health did a survey. They spoke to 700 women and asked them to rank 11 different pieces of clothing on how hot they are.
I bet they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong.
I'll give you the real number 1 when you're done.
This is men.
What women
telling
will find
us
most attractive.
What we want.
This is women saying what they like to see men wear.
Yeah.
It's the other way around. Okay.
So what they said is, here are a few things that women would like you to be wearing. They find it hot. Actually, the winner of the whole list, clean white T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
8 out of 10 find that hot.
Yeah, that's if you have the physique to fill it out. If you don't have that physique, they're not into it.
Yeah, then you're a guy in a T-shirt. Then you're the gardener.
Some others high on the list. Casual blazer. Women seem to enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Cargo shorts.
Mm-hmm. That was a bar me and Bill went to the other day.
The casual blazer?
Casual blazer. It's in between Mr. Fister.
And total blazer.
And total blazer.
Flaming blazer.
Cargo shorts are hot.
Mm-hmm.
And also slim fit jeans. Here's some things to avoid. Do not wear black jeans. Those scored very low. No black jeans, no baggy jeans, no flannel shirt.
I'm good.
baseball hat got a 4 out of 10.
Mm.
And denim shorts, 3.5.
Well, few things. Denim, I think the baseball hat scores low because they assume the guy who's sporting it is hiding a bald spot.
Right.
So you see it and you go, what's he got hiding under that baseball cap? Not a full head of hair. So there's a little compensation. Like when you see a chick with a hot body wearing baggy clothes, you're like, what's she, why is she wearing baggy clothes? And you rarely see it when chicks have hot bodies. They let the world know.
No.
Right.
All these things,
so
though, that you mentioned, most of the things you've mentioned are predicated on the person having a nice body.
Yeah,
guy
a white t-shirt.
Wearing a pair of jeans and a white t-shirt, if he looks like a model, it's going to look great. And if he looks like an accountant, it's not going to be sexy.
Actually, jeans, white t-shirt and real tight jeans and like a brown cowboy boot for some reason, I don't know why brown, is one of my favorite sexing looks for women.
Really?
Real tight jeans and a tight white t-shirt. I think that
a white t-shirt works well on women, too.
But can I say it? And we are number one in Portland, as I understand it, and I'm not talking to you. I live in Hollywood, and I make my living in Hollywood, and this is who I'm talking to.
Hmm.
You want the number one piece of apparel that women that I know want you to wear? A wallet so stuffed with money you can't get it into your denim shorts. That's every chick I know.
That's why they like the tight denim. Don't like the tight denim shorts.
Cargo pants, because you want to carry a cargo of money so you can afford these chicks in Hollywood.
Right.
And the $14 cocktails at the Sky Bar. No offense.
You just went to green.
Nothing but gold diggers.
Well, you know, let me give this tip out. As I see a lot of guys sporting a lot of looks, you know, the weird rat tail thing that guys have every once in a while.
Yeah.
I saw this the other day when I was out of town. The guy who's wearing the earring, who doesn't seem like the guy who should be wearing the earring. This guy is 40-something years old. He doesn't have a crazy hairdo. There's nothing rock and roll about him. His earring isn't even barely an earring. It's a small little stud, not even a diamond. Just a small silver stud the size of a BB.
Some 12-year-old would put to her nose.
Yes. I saw this cat wearing this thing at a Starbucks a few days ago, and he had a mustache, and it looked like... I'll tell you, he did some sort of maintenance job, but that paid decently.
Right.
He looked like he worked on aircraft or something like that. He wasn't blue collar. He wasn't a crazy nationality. It didn't look like there was nothing rock and roll or antisocial about him. He was just a regular guy. Sort of like Harrison Ford when he decided to act 20 years younger because he was on top of someone that was 40 years younger. He decided to wear a little hoop. This guy just wears a little stud, and I thought to myself, what is this doing for you? You think you're getting that promotion or you're getting laid? Like, isn't this neither here nor there? And if it is, who cares? Why are you bothering? With the amount of effort it takes for you to put it in and keep track of it and take it out at night and do whatever it is you have to do gets you zero yield. No return on this thing, other than guys like me thinking you're a 45-year-old douchebag.
Right, exactly, because the way I dress, you could easily make fun of, but I like it, and I'll defend it or I won't defend it, and I won't care what you think about it. But I won't wear an earring because I feel like then I'm making a statement. The crazy clothes I wear are just the clothes I like, and I don't care what you think about them.
But if you're going
to
wear
an earring in,
if you wear an earring,
I'm trying to say something about myself.
Make a statement. This is a non-statement earring. This guy's wearing Dockers and a button-up short-sleeve shirt, and he has a little salt and pepper in his hair, and there's the earring. It's weird. And you know he didn't have it in high school, and he wasn't formerly in a biker gang. It's somewhere around his 42nd birthday, the guy who was the airplane maintenance guy decided, who'd been married for 22 years, who has a kid in college, decided, I should get this really super small silver BB-sized stud that is almost so small it's distracting because it doesn't really show. That's going to make me whole again.
It just means he couldn't afford the red sports car for the midlife crisis, dude.
Maybe you're right. All right, we need to take ourselves a break. Home improvement questions, everybody.
800-866.
That's right.
866-901-ADAM.
I will answer your home improvement questions next.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, Adam's taking your home improvement calls. If you got a question, he's got an answer. Call 866-901-ADAM. Now back to Adam, Danny, and Teresa on the Adam Carolla Show.
All right. Well, let's get started because we're pressed for time. Do we have an intro?
From the pantheon of morning radio,
this is
a solitary gladiator steps into the ring.
Bad stuff. There you go. Thank you.
Nice, you guys.
Let's Nicely help the done. Kiddies. Grant?
Yes.
What's happening, my brother?
Hey, my wife and I are thinking about buying a house, and it kind of has too many walls in it, lots of hallways and doors and stuff. How do I know which walls are okay to knock out and which walls have to stay up?
That's a great question, man. That's a supporting wall.
Bearing versus non-bearing.
This is amazing.
I want to do that, and I have no idea.
You can usually tell, let's say if there's a hallway. Right. And the hallway is 6 foot wide, but it's 20 foot long. Well, it'll be running the short way because to span the 20 foot, just look at it as stripes.
I'm with you.
Look at the ceiling joists as stripes. You try to figure out which way the stripes are running, up and down or right to left.
Oh,
you know
what
I mean? Frontward or backward. So picture a hallway that's 6 foot wide and 20 feet long or 100 feet long.
Right.
Okay.
They're going to run the short way. Because to run them the long way means you have to get a 2x10 that's 100 feet long versus a 2x10 that's 6 foot long.
This is the first one I've totally understood so far. I'm with you.
I've done 28 of these.
Yeah, I don't know. All right.
So the short way, the smart money is usually on the shortest direction. If a room is 20 foot by 10 foot, it's going to be the 10 foot direction. Usually. You can get up in the attic, poke your head up, and see what direction the ceiling joists are running. Once you discern that, you then look down and see which way the walls are running. The walls that are running the same direction as the joists aren't bearing.
We're having a ball out here.
The ones that run across, perpendicular, are the ones that are being rested upon. And if that's the case, even then, all you have to do is head it out, as they say. Put a header up in there. And the header, if you want to take a little more time to support the weight, doesn't have to go below it and thus come into the room. You can cut them and hang them on the header and make it flush with the ceiling. And I'm guessing this is not a two-story house, yes?
Right.
No.
Shocker. So you'll be fine. Buy away, my friend. And you're buying in Fresno.
Yes, sir.
How much is a house over there just so Danny can vomit when he just spent $850K for a condo?
It's about $200,000.
Do you have a yard? Do you have actual grass?
Yeah, actually, it's on a third of an acre.
$200K's on a third of an acre.
Danny has a dumpster and a hobo for a backyard.
Square footage?
1,600.
All right. Well,
I don't know how we're going to top this.
He's got you beat there, my brother.
Well, my sister-in-law just bought a house in Texas. It's 2,500 square feet, and they paid $125,000.
It is absolutely amazing. And it's not like school teachers in Los Angeles make $350K a year, and in Aberdeen they make $4 a year. The school teacher over there makes $45K and we make $50, right? How is that going to offset the house costing $600,000 more? And that's a low estimate. All right, let's talk to...
Now, this is interesting.
Let's see. Bad caulking. Hey, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
You want to know what to do with the bad caulking?
Yeah, I got a tub, and the caulk's been becoming decayed. You know, it's getting brown and brittle, and I want to know how to get that out of there, and what do you replace it with?
You would do it with the new caulking.
This obviously is nice.
And you need to, they're tools that you can get it out, utility knife or what have you. Go over to the Home Depot, go over to the whatever section, get the new stuff. The new stuff you put down with your finger. Here's the key to the caulking gun.
Yeah.
Key to the caulking gun is when you cut the nozzle, the nozzle is just a solid piece of plastic. When you nip it at the end, you get a moil to come in there and just snip it off at the end. Everyone snips a huge hole in the end. Don't do it. Snip a small hole in the end of the thing.
Are you using like an X-Acto knife to snip that?
You can use scissors, X-Acto knife, or whatever, but don't come all the way up the nozzle where it's big and fat. It tapers down. Do it at the thin point, okay? And when you use the caulking gun, release the little release mechanism on it when you set it down. Because when you take the pressure, you know, you do and you set it down because the phone rings, it keeps oozing. You have to release the thing. Otherwise, you'll have a huge pile of caulk in your bathroom.
Nice to talk to you.
We don't want that. Let's see. How to fix a wooden fence. Rich?
Yes, Adam.
Real fast, like,
I have a wooden fence that I just took a bunch of ivy off, and I realized painfully that it's about to fall on my neighbor's car.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to fix it myself, but I'm worried. Am I in over my head trying to put up a fence, or do I need to pay some overpriced contractor to do it?
Inside the glory hole.
Yeah, some are just overpriced. You know, we don't all gouge. We're just overpriced. Is it a redwood TNG 1x6, 6-foot fence, dog-eared at the top?
Exactly, and I think it's even got the little lattice thing at the top, but I could give, you know, our rats about the lattice. I just want a structure that...
Do you have to put down new 4x4 redwood posts or treated, pressure-treated lumber posts into the ground?
I don't know yet, but maybe.
Okay, thanks for the definitive answer. Here's what I would do if I were you. I would take the whole fence down. I would just leave those 4x4s. Those are the big posts that are in the ground.
Right.
All right. I would take myself a couple of pieces of galvanized steel post. Don't go with the wood stuff, and put that in between the ones that are already in the ground to shore it up. They also then have special clips that you can screw 2x4 stringers onto, so you can have something to screw your new 1x6 dog-eared redwood fence to.
Oh, boy.
That's no big deal. Just use galvanized screws when you put that on instead of nails, and you'll be fine. And set yourself a little string line with a line level on it and throw a level. Here's the key. When you're doing a fence... and you're going to put up 200 of these slats,
right,
about every five of them, throw a level on it. Because if you start getting out a level, you don't want to find out 150 into it when you're essentially horizontal. Throw the level on it, and then you can start correcting it. Good times.
We'll be back.
We'll be back. Yes, indeed, indeed. Well, by the sound of that blues guitar, means it's almost time to go. But before we leave, I want to thank Donnie Wahlberg.
He's good, huh?
Yeah, The Kill Point. Sunday nights, 9 p.m., Spike TV. Gabe Kaplan, Cotter's back. Book looks really interesting. I was just thumbing through it. And our good friend Rob Zombie.
Huge day.
Halloween. Three. Yeah, pretty good books and bookings today. Halloween in theaters, August 31st. Until next time, Adam Carolla saying, mahalo.
Dump that kindergartner.